Tonight on The Download, from spot hero CEO Mark Lawrence, beatbox sensations Yuri Lane and Paris Reed, and Pitchfork Music Festival performer Hamilton Lighthouser. Now, here's your host, a man who celebrated 7-Eleven with a free Slurpee in 14 hours at the casino, Justin Kaufman.
I'm old school. You know, before this Slurpee business, you get on the craps table and you just don't let it go. That's what I was taught. Never let it go. Play until you're out of money and you're on a credit. Just keep playing. 7-Eleven. I'm telling you, I should start a new gambling podcast where I just give the worst advice ever. You hit on 16, you hit always. You hit on 17. It's called Hit on 17. That's what it's called. I've played craps probably 5-10 times in my life at Vegas, and every time I'm like, I'll tell the story. I first started playing. The guy, and maybe they say this to everybody, but I was in Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas, and I walked over and I'm like, oh, I'm kind of interested in this game. And he goes, where are you from? I'm like, Chicago. And he goes, oh, you just missed Coach Dickey. He was just here. And I'm like, cash me in. I'll play on this table. How do you play? An hour later, I'm like, really? I don't get any money back? It's all gone? Everything's gone? Oh, that's all. Okay. Well, that's craps. You're always a sucker in Chicago. Everywhere you go, it doesn't matter where it's at. Anyone's, Coach Dickey was just here. What? That's how they get all of us in all the tourist towns. I'll eat here. Coach Dickey was here. I'll golf here. I'll gamble here. I'll stay here. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. With you till 11 o'clock tonight. We got a great show lined up coming up here in the 7 o'clock hour right after the news. We're going to talk with CEO and co-founder of Spot Hero, Mark Lawrence, will be my guest in the Download in Chicago business. We'll talk about a company here in Chicago that has expanded nationwide, 12 different cities, essentially revolutionizing the way we pay for parking. Talk about that coming up in the 7:30 hour. Also tonight, Al Genie, professor of business ethics and our resident philosopher here on the Download, is back in studio to continue our conversation. We had done a couple weeks ago, now it's a couple months, but we had done the seven deadly sins. We really broke down what that was all about. And the companion piece, the seven virtues, that's tonight's discussion. How can we be better? What does it mean to be virtuous? The seven virtues. We did the seven deadly sins, sexier. But we get to the seven virtues about how to be a better person tonight with our resident philosopher. Also tonight, human beatbox Yuri Lane back in studio, and he's bringing a buddy. Going to perform some live human beatboxing. They're going to be part of the shows that are being put on by the Park District over the weekend. Talk with Yuri Lane about his latest and also hear some live beatboxing in studio. Hamilton Lighthouser from The Walkman, also collaborating with Rostam from Vampire Weekend. It's going to be at Pitchfork Music Festival and here on The Download tonight. Talk with the singer-songwriter who's really, it's amazing. He plays festival after festival. We'll be at Pitchfork for the second time. And we'll have him on tonight. And also we'll play the worst, Elizabeth Gomez and Soli Santos in studio tonight, where we complain about the worst things in society for prizes. All right. Good show, right? I think it's a good show. News, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier and Esmeralda Leon. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll do the carry out. Stay with us. All right, it's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Let's carry out. Here today is top stories. Well, Donald Trump Jr. released the emails from a previously undisclosed meeting with a Russian lawyer for one side. It proves collusion, as he seems to understand that the meeting is being set up by a Russian government to help Trump's campaign. To the others, well, Hillary. As more and more arguments erupt on your uncle's Facebook page, take a step back. The question that needs to be answered is pretty simple. Did the Trump administration knowingly or unknowingly accept help from a foreign power to win an election? Forget the hacks, the emails, the Miss Universe pageant, all of it. Did a candidate get support from a foreign government to win an election? If you listen to Trump defenders, there's a big, so what, big deal, who cares, coming from the chorus. Some go even further to say everybody does it. But all of those comments don't answer the question above. Did the Trump administration accept help, that could be money, hacking, etc., from a foreign power, hostile in this case, to win an election? Or did a rogue Russian agent of the government just have some dirt on Hillary Clinton? Or can it be both? And do we care at all that Donald Trump Jr. and Jared Kushner never told any authorities, even in governmental forums, that this meeting took place? White House Chief of Staff Rance Priebus called this revelation a big old nothing burger. Yeah, smothered in melted lies and caramelized untruths. That actually sounds good. Really good right about now. Best part, Trump Jr. released the emails himself today to show that he was, quote, transparent, which is what his father called him on Twitter. This really happened because the New York Times was going to release him today, and he did it to try and control the story. I mean, who's advising him? The mayor of Chicago? Hey! And finally, the Trump family continues to amend and divert an outright lie about, well, everything. It's a shame because what it does is it makes it very hard for the American people to believe any statement or tweet or off-the-cuff remark that comes from the administration. And I don't care what side of the aisle you're on. That's new. The hearing over the Cook County sugary drinks tax was canceled for tomorrow. Board President Tony Preckwinkle said that if the tax isn't reinstated soon, there will be layoffs. Wait, I thought this was a tax about our health, not to create more revenue. Or are you only laying off the obese county workers? Just asking. Millionaire Wars. A new poll says that Chris Kennedy still holds a lead in the Democratic field for governor of Illinois. He leads over Chicago businessman J.B. Pritzker, who has outspent Kennedy and received multiple endorsements. Wait, did any other millionaires make the poll? Did the ghost of Marshall Field or Potter Palmer at least get 5%? Where's the Monopoly guy polling with his big old-timey mustache? Is he doing well with Latino voters? It's millionaires. Governor Rauner announced he has a new chief of staff, and she's the former head of the Illinois Policy Institute. She just prompted the Sun-Times to write sharp right turn all over the front of their newspaper today. One pundit even said that the new hire means war in Springfield. Really? So what was the last 3 years? If not war, just a really intense game of badminton? And last I checked, Rauner was a right-wing Republican, so I'm not surprised that his new pick for chief of staff is also a right-wing Republican. Wow, who knew? In weather, it's like putting your face over the radiator. And rain. In sports, the All-Star game's underway. One Cub, one Sox, and the NL team is managed by Joe Maddon. So that means the slowest right fielder in the lineup leads off? Or the closer comes in by the fifth inning? And this time the game is being played for nothing. Yep, this year they go back to the old way where the game doesn't count for squat and doesn't mean anything for home field advantage in the World Series. This after last year when the Indians got an extra game because the AL won the All-Star game. The league realized that the Cubs lost out and that everyone lost out because it would have been so much better to have one more game at Wrigley in Chicago than instead of Geico or Carl's Jr. Park or whatever it's called in Cleveland, right? So they changed it. Seriously, half a season late. So now that the stakes are gone, we can go back to watching the All-Star game out of the corner of our eye while we sand a table in the garage. You know, baseball. The lineup for the NL, they got Charlie Blackmon, Stanton, Harper, Posey, Murphy, Arenado, Zimmerman, Ozuna, and Zach Cozart. For the AL, it's Rod Carew, Robin Yount, Freddie Lynn, Jim Rice, George Brett, Ted Simmons, Dave Winfield, and Manny Trio. Oh, you know what? I'm sorry. That's the lineup for the AL squad from the 83 All-Star game. Sorry, just my bad. The rumor mill's heating up, and sources in Detroit are saying that the Cubs and Tigers are looking at a trade scenario for Kyle Schwarber. This is highly speculative and probably not going to happen, but I'd rather talk shady trades than shady collusion any day. So the rumors say that we send Schwarbs to Detroit for AL Rookie of the Year starting pitcher Michael Fulmer. Probably wishful thinking at this point, but I'd take that trade in a heartbeat. Cubs fans would probably disagree because they love that Schwarbs hit that one home run 2 years ago against the Cardinals. The playoffs, remember that one? Where it hit, like it was really a long one, it hit the sign, stayed up there. Joe Buck went crazy, put a glass thing over it. Now we can't trade Schwarber? All right. Okay. The Bulls summer league continues, and the Bulls are now without Cameron Payne, who left for family reasons. He joins Chris Dunn, who also left for family reasons. Are the family reasons that they don't want to play in the summer league? Just asking. Also hard to believe, but Derrick Rose still not signed with a team for next season. One of the sports sites did a list of the top 25 players still left, and he ranks 13th. That means there are 12 better players than Derrick Rose, and that includes Nikola Mirotic and former Bull Pau Gasol. What? Both of those guys rank in the top 10. Man, how far has D. Rose fallen? I really hope he gets picked up soon and he destroys the league before his next knee injury. He really destroys it. He deserves it. And finally tonight, today is National Ice Cream Day. So do yourself a favor and eat a pint of ice cream and celebrate the fact that we live in a country where you can eat a pint of ice cream in one sitting without being sent to labor camps. So eat up. Use the big spoon. That's the carryout for July 11, 2017. We may not have free Slurpees, but we do have free burpees today. Run to the line, then halfway, three quarters, then back to the line. Boom. All for free. You're welcome. All right, coming up, we'll talk with the CEO of Spot Hero, Mark Lawrence. He'll be my guest in the Download in Chicago Business. And then coming up at 8 o'clock, our resident philosopher is here, Al Genie. It's the Download, 720 WGN. Stay with us. Rob Martier, how are you, my friend?
Oh, man. Let me get through this update quick so I can get back to the All-Star game.
Yeah, this is your time.
Pins and needles, man. Pins and needles. Let's see. Chris Sale's going to open up, though.
Yeah. Chris Sale's going to pitch
bottom
for two
of the,
innings,
bottom
right?
of the first. That's right.
I know, right?
Yeah. Don't want to blow out that arm in the All-Star game.
I hope he does. Yeah, as a Sox fan, I hope he does. Anyway.
How's the cat? How's
good.
The kitty?
Day two. Feeling pretty good. Day
any
three.
More poop?
No. I let the cat out and we explored today, and that was super easy. And then the cat got really mad at me when I put him back in the room.
Mm.
And my wife was like, oh, and I'm like, I'm not, I don't care. We can whine all you want. You can meow all you want.
Was he kind of doing that little thing when you put him down in the grass where the blades of grass are kind of like tickling his tummy and he has to kind of jump sort of thing?
I didn't take him outside. That's the one thing I didn't. When I mean outside, I mean to the
oh, you just took him out of the room.
To,
oh, is holding the
bathroom.
Holding cell.
Yeah,
yes,
exactly.
I got you. Okay.
So that's good. Could you imagine like on day two, I'm like, let's go see the park. You want to see how big this world really is? You know what? Let's go to Great America. I want to show you something.
Peregrine Falcon sweeps down and grabs your kitten.
That would absolutely happen.
It's business time. It's business. It's business time.
I don't know what you're trying to say. You're trying to say it's time for business. It's business time.
Ooh, it's business. It's business.
Love that song. It's the Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. It's time for the Download on Chicago Business, sponsored by Signature Bank, segment that takes a look at small business in Chicago tonight. CEO and co-founder of Spot Hero, Mark Lawrence. In 2011, he and his co-founder Larry Kiss founded Spot Hero as a solution to a problem. In this situation, it was mounting parking tickets. So they created an app that would allow you to reserve parking spots. You can reserve a spot in a downtown garage before your car even leaves the driveway. What started as a business in Chicago has grown to over 47 other cities and raised $27 million in capital. Spot Hero is as much a company that specializes in parking, but it's really much more than that. It's a tech company. It's an innovator. It's a disruptor. And it's changed the face of parking as we know it and, of course, the future. Mark Lawrence is the co-founder and CEO of Spot Hero, and he's my guest tonight on the Download in Chicago Business. Mark, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
So, is that accurate, the story, that you started it because you guys were amassing too many parking tickets?
You know, love to drive, hate to park, like parking tickets even less, and thought there had to be a better way.
You know, it's a funny, to think about 2011, 2010, too. I mean, that's really when you start thinking about how parking changed in the city of Chicago. But, mm-hmm. I mean, to say, okay, I don't like parking, mm-hmm. Or I don't like to pay for parking, getting parking tickets. That's a far stretch from, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to come up with a whole new concept on how to find parking spaces and use technology to do that. I mean, talk about the idea of making that transition to starting this company.
Oh, you know, it wasn't, there were a lot of steps. And so it didn't just start out as an app. We started out as a website where you actually had to take a piece of paper and print it out and bring it to, you know, a person. And it's morphed over the years as the parking companies have adopted more and more technology, where it's become integrated, it's mobile first, and it's really, really been exciting. So we could change and make parking easier. Spot Hero, as you mentioned, we're not a parking company. We're in transportation. We help people get everywhere easier, and that's the whole premise of the company.
Take us back to Wrigleyville and the idea of really, I mean, how you started this concept, the nuts and bolts of starting Spot Hero. I mean, it was, you had to print out a piece of paper.
Well, we walked door to door to get people who lived in Wrigley Field to allow us to rent out their parking online. And then there had to be a printed piece of paper that was on the car so that the owner knew that, you know, they should be there. That was really the nuts and bolts of how it
and
started.
And how did people react? I mean, was it a win for them in the sense that they were renting out their parking spots? But how did people, you're going door to door knocking on the door, how did they usually react?
Well, some people loved it. There were those that, you know, were at work and their spaces were empty. They're the ones that loved it. And so that's how it started. And we expanded to different neighborhoods. We went, you know, neighborhood by neighborhood, downtown. We started working with different parking companies. And, you know, over time, there were more and more neighborhoods, more and more garages, more and more lots that adopted it to make it easier. Because it's not just, you know, parking. It's where am I going to park? How much am I going to pay? And how do I get somewhere easier?
Right.
And, you know, that's actually our the whole premise of the company is we allow people to get everywhere easier.
This has been an industry that has exploded, and you guys have been at the center of it, at the forefront of it. The idea of being able to go in and find parking opportunities for people who it used to be a major stress. I mean, I think of only myself in the way that, you know, going downtown or doing anything with the car was half of the battle is trying to figure out where I'm going to park. So taking that away, I mean, that seems to be even part of the business plan on top of, you know, avoiding parking tickets.
That's the whole idea, because, you know, you're driving downtown, you're stuck in traffic, you're worried. All this anxiety doesn't need to exist. And it also helps with, you know, where cities are looking future forward to be green, where right now 30% of traffic is actually caused by people looking for parking and not actually going somewhere. Can't really measure the stress levels, but I'm sure that at least 30% of the stress is due to parking as well. And so if you've got Spot Hero, you can take care of both, and it makes it easier to get somewhere. You don't have to worry about, you know, where you're going to park and how much you're going to pay. And you don't have to drive around stuck in traffic. You can drive straight to the entrance of a parking garage versus struggling to find where you're even going to go.
What are the challenges? I mean, as you grow and you move to a mobile platform and you move out from the piece of paper in Wrigleyville and you move to a company now that, like I said, has raised 27 mil in capital in 47 cities around the country. I mean, what were the challenges in making that adjustment? I mean, were you tech first? Were you thinking about mobile platforms? Did you have to find the right people? What was standing in the way of making that transition?
At the end of the day, people are everything. Talent is everything. And, you know, what was standing in the way is we didn't have people or the capital. A lot of folks, they would say, well, you should have a mobile app. And the idea was always to make parking easier, to have a mobile app. We didn't have the funds nor the people to be able to do that at the time. And so, you know, where we started, it's like, what got us here won't get us there. We've, you know, got extraordinary talent. And, you know, now having almost 200 team members, it's kind of crazy to think back to the Wrigley Field days when, you know, it was just a couple of us. And actually, there's someone who was still with us. Our first hire is still with us, Justin Squalacci, who used to help flag for Wrigleyville back in the day. He's actually still with Spot Hero.
I mean, for you, as a co-founder of the company and being in a position where you are faced with challenges which come down to talent and come to capital. And I mean, how do you navigate that? I mean, you know where you want to go, but there are these obstacles in your way. As a small business owner, how do you make that transition and keep moving forward as opposed to giving up?
Yeah, so I think knowing where to go, that's like half the battle, right? Because if you don't know where you're going, how are you going to get there? And for us, having the talent, it's like the most important piece, but also it's having the values that guide how you get there. So it's knowing where to go, and then also the values and how to get there. And so, you know, we have different ones where parkers first. We do things for drivers so that it ultimately benefits everybody. They get to park easier and they get to get everywhere easier. And it also benefits the parking companies that work with us because now the drivers are happy and they want to park more. And then it also helps the cities because you don't have all this traffic and pollution and smog because people are going directly where they need to go as opposed to driving around in
circles. And that goes a long way when you talk about values and value statements or mission statements, if you will, and other, but that goes a long way to helping you in times where you definitely, you know, have challenges that you have to overcome or obstacles you have to get over when you have that sort of value statement.
And it took us a year to actually solidify our values, a lot longer than I would have thought. And it was kind of a funny process where we had some that thought this and others that thought that. But we finally were able to rally around not just the values, but the words to define them. And they're public on our website. This is, you know, how we recruit. This is how we retain. This is how it guides us towards where we're going. And so, you know, one value, for example, is called don't get stuck in traffic, which is one where we think about how do we solve something versus pointing to a reason why something can't be done. And it's a value of, you know, resilience at its best. And it comes up a lot, like, hey, are we getting stuck in traffic right now as we're thinking about things? And so I'd say, you know, any small business, it might, you know, sound kind of cheesy, but, you know, it took us a year to do it from the start to the finish. And it's been one of the most important things that has helped guide us from when we were 20 people and we solidified our values to where we're now 200.
Wow. Mark Lawrence in studio. He's the co-founder and CEO of Spot Hero. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll continue the conversation here on the Download of Chicago Business. Stay with us.
It's business time.
It's a Download on Chicago Business, sponsored by Signature Bank. In studio with me tonight, Mark Lawrence. He's the co-founder and CEO of Spot Hero. I mean, revolutionized parking in the sense that you can go to a mobile app and you can reserve a parking space before you even have to do the circle, the dreaded circle, or you know, have to spend an inordinate amount of money to get into a lot. A lot of this is based on, and I kind of brought it up at the beginning of the segment, this idea that, yes, you're a parking company, but you're also a tech company, and you're a disruptor in the way that you are taking a business that has been done a certain way for a very long time. Parking is an old industry here in Chicago, and revolutionizing it. What goes in? What stands in the way of that? That's very enlightened, but at the same time, I'll bet you run into a lot of things that you didn't think about when trying to revolutionize an industry.
Yeah, so I think there's, you know, the existing infrastructure and the existing ways of doing things. And so when you talk about revolutionizing, it doesn't have to be this crazy, just overnight you go wham, bam, right? It's, you know, the incremental steps. As we, you know, previously talked, you know, there's the start of a Weir website with accepting prepaid reservations with a printed receipt, which sounds kind of crazy today, but then that was revolutionary.
Yeah, right.
Because the alternative was it's a cash-only place with an unknown price, right? And so moving forward through those steps to now we've got a mobile app and there's integrations and there's license plate recognition. And so thinking ahead, what are the next steps? And that's how things progress over time.
You're in a business where you partner with the old. You may be new, but you partner with the old. I think of parking garages. I don't necessarily think of them as tech juggernauts. I mean, I think of parking garages are the last bastion of the blinking sign that says park here. So how do you, when you're trying to do a tech company that uses all the things you just mentioned, how do you make sure that your partners are up to speed and not antiquated or falling behind?
You know, I think it's working with them to leverage technology to see how it fits their needs. Because different parking companies and different parking garages and lots have different needs, and leveraging that so that we can bring the value to them and to the consumer. And so, as I mentioned, our values are drivers first, and putting those first actually, in some senses, actually puts the really a lot of benefits on the parking companies. And so, you know, we talked about autonomous vehicles and what that's going to bring in the future. And most parking companies aren't thinking about this at all. And so we have been, you know, partnering with them to kind of get them ready for.
Let me ask you about that, because you're talking about driverless cars. You're talking about what we've seen in the last couple of years, a push towards more investment and the idea that we might see a Chicago in 20, 30, 40 years where there are driverless cars on the road. And the question, and I find it fascinating, I was reading this whole article about you guys, that your business plan looking forward is, where are we going to park those cars? Where are those cars going to be? Those need to be stored at some point if they're not going to be parked on the street. And that's where you're developing a strategy for business in the future.
Exactly, because these types of things, especially with companies, you know, parking companies, while they're focused on the operations of now and how do we make, you know, things hum today, we've been working with them to help leverage technology to think about that future, because it's coming. And it's going to be awesome if you're prepared for it and ready. And the only way to do that is to embrace technology to be ready for an autonomous
Do you hedge your bet a little bit? I mean, as a company that is also about the now, meaning people are using Spot Hero every single day in 47 different cities. Do you run the risk of, you know, autonomous cars? You put money into what you're going to do about this issue, and then it doesn't happen? I mean, where technology lets you down?
So I think the foundation of today as a tech company allows us to execute upon and be ready for that future of tomorrow. So we're not just solely building for tomorrow. There's some companies that do that and definitely run the risk of, okay, I'm building everything for this future and it might not come. What's great for us is a lot of things we have to do actually help for today, and the execute on the business today actually help that future. So for example, if you have cash-only garages that aren't connected to the internet, there's no way that when autonomous cars come, they'll be ready for the future. However, when you've got mobile digital payments, you've got garages connected to the internet, these are the types of things that right. they help today, and they make driving easier for all these parkers today, but it also sets it up for the future of tomorrow for the car when there isn't a driver.
In the last couple of years, 2 years to be exact, I mean, you have seen some amazing growth.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you've tripled the amount of cities you're in.
Mm-hmm.
You raised $27 million in capital. It's fascinating to see how the Chicago company has just taken off. As the CEO of that company, what are the challenges of such expanded growth? I mean, the idea of it sort of happening, and I don't want to say it's overnight because you guys have mm-hmm. been building towards this. But the idea of having now 47 cities, and that means a whole new set of customers, probably I'm assuming some cities you're not that familiar with that mm-hmm. are using your product. I mean, how do you as a CEO, what are the challenges that pop up when you're expanding at that rate?
Yeah, I think there's, you know, a lot of operational challenges as we expand to different cities. I think those are some of the easier ones because we can have process that solve that. I think where it becomes harder is the talent. And how do we keep the culture? What are the things that got us to where we are? And how do we scale that culture? How do we scale that message? And how do I scale as a CEO? Because the things that I did when we were 20 people are very different than
yeah,
what
right.
I do at 200. And same thing with every level of everyone that is in the organization. And that culture piece is extremely important, going back to the values of why we have those, how we've solidified that, and how that's been one of the most important things that we've set. But we still have to be thinking about how they scale.
Parking has always been a municipal endeavor, meaning cities are in the game. You see
mm-hmm.
What we have here in Chicago with the parking meters is a mm-hmm. very famous story here.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that's other words as well. It's also a place where people, cities find revenue. Do you see a future in which Spot Hero moves in that direction where you work with more municipalities to help collect revenue? Or, you know, are you a company that works almost in competition with cities for parking spaces and parking space?
So I think we already work with cities. There's this, you know, right now the city of Chicago, we work with different city of Chicago properties that drive revenue. And so we're already working with different cities. And I think the way we think about it is we help everyone to get everywhere easier. And so that doesn't preclude us from working with one partner over the other. I think it's how do we leverage our skills and the mm-hmm. value add that we have so that we can work with the different partners to help everyone get everywhere easier.
I think about it, and this is kind of off the top of my head, but you know, Chicago's had such an interesting history with parking, especially street parking,
mm-hmm.
and you just wonder if, you know, there needs to be a disruptor in that market, in the market where, you know, instead of doing it the way it has been done all along. I mean, what we've seen is just an upgrade in the last 5-6 years with
mm-hmm.
privatizing it and making it machines and
mm-hmm.
being able to do the things on our phone, similar to the kind of stories that you're telling. Do you see a future in which cities around the country, they look at parking differently, they find different ways to use technology and bring, like you said, bring parking spaces to the people?
Yeah, I think, you know, cities are thinking about the future of how do people move around? This is how it works today. Where is it going to happen tomorrow? And what's really interesting is a lot of cities are taking a really long-term view of how do their cities, what do they ultimately become from a transportation people movement perspective? And I think, you know, where we've been able to fit in is a large piece of that because a lot of people do drive. And whether the cars drive themselves or there's a human driving it, the question is, where are they going to park and how much are they going to pay? And if that they is a human with an interface of a phone or it's a car where it's a different interface, they need to be able to hook into the parking structures wherever they may sit. And in the meantime, what we've been able to do is really, I think a major value proposition to cities are we reduce traffic. We cut down on pollution. We're a huge reduction in traffic when you can take out people just circling for no reason, not knowing
yeah,
where to go.
That's so interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. You know exactly where you're going to park and you know exactly how much you're going to pay ahead of time.
Last question, what does it mean to be a Chicago company as you're now in 47 mm-hmm. different you know, cities in this country? I mean, what does it mean to be a Chicago company from this town?
I think what it means to be a Chicago company is we are very measured in our approach. And what we can do is draw from a diverse talent pool. I mean, Chicago isn't dominated by one industry over the other. And there's a lot of talent here, from marketing to technology. And it's not just one industry that kind of overshadows everything. And there's a ton of big companies, small companies from all types of industries that are based here. And so I think, you know, this is a great place to start a company. I've been exceptionally... You know, the gratitude I have for Chicago and how they've rallied around us is really hard to describe. And I think that this is an amazing place to start a company.
Mark Lawrence is the co-founder and CEO of Spot Hero. We're talking about that small business, of course, here in the Download on Chicago Business. Mark, thanks so much for taking some time out to talk to us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
It's a good segment there. Spot Hero guy, Mark Lawrence. You know, and it's fascinating because we do that segment every Tuesday and it never fails. That really it's small businesses that are built to solve problems. That's a great one. It's hard to find parking. You circle around. The idea that traffic is actually created by us circling around trying to find parking. No more of me slamming on the brakes and yelling at someone trying to go in where I'm trying to back in. They're trying to pull in front. I'm trying to pull in back, like a Seinfeld episode.
Oh, man, that's the worst.
Right.
People
See?
Trying to pull forward into a parallel parking spot. You can't do it.
I mean, the only I should have asked him this. The only thing about the rate, like if you show up to get your spot and somebody's in it, I would think that'd be double parking rage. You know, if you paid for it in advance.
Sure.
And then, you know, a guy like me, a sneakster like me, is like, I'll just park right here.
I would totally come unhinged.
That's the only downside.
Be like, I bet you a cat owner drives that car.
That kitten. All right, coming up, we go from solving the problems of parking to solving the problems of you. Oh, did I just nail that? Download resident philosopher Al Genie coming in. We'll talk about the seven virtues. We talked about the seven deadly sins a couple months ago. We continue that conversation with the seven virtues. Thanks, Rob. $99. Yes. That fight, wow. HD, though. That's good. That's probably what it's worth. So you can see the spit and blood.
$89 for standard definition.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, it's $10 cheaper.
Okay. Well, there's a deal. That's a deal. All right. Coming up tonight in the 9 o'clock hour, we're going to have some music. The human beatbox Yuri Lane will be in studio. He's bringing another Parker Reed, another beatboxer with, well, dueling beatboxes. The human beatbox. How fun is that? Yuri's been on before. It's amazing. To watch Yuri beatbox is so cool. It puts the Police Academy guy to shame. Also, Hamilton Lighthouser will be in, he'll be on the show tonight. He, of course, the frontman for the Walkmen, which are now, I guess, defunct. He just put out an album in 2016 that was considered one of the best in indie rock. He did a collaboration, right? That's what you call it. Rostam from Vampire Weekend. So he's going to be at Pitchfork this weekend. So we will talk with him about his career a little bit later in the show. Well, as we've been talking about all 7 o'clock hour, we haven't had a good chance to talk about, I would say this was probably in March or so, we talked about the seven deadly sins. This was a great show we did with our resident philosopher, Al Genie, where we really broke down the seven deadly sins, where it comes from, what they are, what they mean, and what we can do to avoid them, if possible. But there's another side to the equation. It's the seven heavenly virtues, and we didn't get a chance to talk about the positive. We're always focusing on a negative, Al. That just seems to be the deal. Al Genie's in studio. He's a resident philosopher. He's a professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University of Chicago and a regular here on the show. Professor, good to see you.
Good to be here. Always good to be here. And you know what? Looking at the negative is a good way to begin because, as St. Thomas said, we really learn from the negative act of separation, that we sometimes learn from what's being done the wrong way in order to do it the right way. But I want to come back to the seven deadly sins. Oh, yes, they are the all-too-delicious, all-too-human sins. They're not the worst of the worst. They're not talking about genocide and rape and murder, but they're seven basic sins of the human experience. By the way, Gregory the First wrote them actually for the monastery to remind the monks of what would be appropriate conduct or not. And he talked about pride and envy and anger and sloth. He got tired then and he just stopped. No, I'm sorry. and then greed and then gluttony and lust. And everyone says, but what's so terrible about these? Everyone needs to finish that pizza or feels
pride.
Or yeah. feels an impure thought in regard to one's neighbor's partner, et cetera, et cetera. But what Gregory was talking about, these are the basic sins, and these are the ones that are so common in human life and that challenge us. And if we cannot control these, then we erode our critical skills in regard to larger sins. And it's easier and easier. In other words, in some
gateway
real
sins.
Sense, they're gateway sins. Right. They really are gateway sins. You know, you never thought of it that way.
Right.
Recently, a friend asked me that. He says, do you think marijuana is a gateway drug? I says, only if you really enjoy it, but it's not good enough after a while. And then it's the next, and then the right. next, and right. the next, and the next. I remember somewhere in the 70s, under the rubric of experimentation only, trying a certain kind of stronger hallucinant than that, and saying, "Oh no, this is the end of control. This is not."
You went to the outer edges of control.
You're not on control. You're no longer who you are. You just need that. And really, addiction, when we really talk about it, is we become addicted to ways of life. And so, Gregory was talking about we become addicted to pride when we're only concerned about vanity and our own arrogance, and we want to be superb in regard to others. We become addicted to envy, that is, we're always jealous and covetous. You have that more. And envy is the worst one, because envy just doesn't say, I want what you have. It really says, you have something I want, and you don't deserve it, and I'm going to take it from you, so you suffer in not having it. There's something more to envy. Envy is just, oh, that's a lovely suit. I wish I could have.
<You're right. laughs>
Or I wish I lived in that house. Or look at that car. Isn't that nice? Maybe I'll save up and get one. No, look at that car. And without any ability to defer gratification, I'm going to take that car.
I'm going to take that.
You don't deserve that car. In fact, I'm going to punish you for tempting me. For doing this. So there is something that's insidious about envy.
Yeah, so let's, I guess the question is, were the seven deadly sins written at the same time as our topic tonight, the seven heavenly virtues?
No, the seven deadly sins were put together a couple times, but finally Gregory I and his pontificate was 590 to 604,
okay.
And I was not there at the coronation, so don't even... I know
you
the
were
photo.
Sick? Were you sick?
I know the photo looks like it, but that wasn't really me.
You were on vacation.
I think it was a Cucino. It was a cousin that goes back a little while, and he wrote these. And then there was a series of others that came out of the Coptic Rite before that, and then in about 410, Aurelius. Ready? I love this name. Prudentius, and it means the prudential
the old Prudentius
one.
Building.
The old Prudentius building. Thanks very much. It's a really nice place. You could take a taxi over there and do that. That's what I love about Chicago E's. You know, you could slur anything.
You can't.
But Prudentius actually means the prudent one in some sense. He proposed seven virtues, which were in some sense an amalgam of the classic philosophical virtues. Now, Socrates and Aristotle came up with, in the Republic, the first book on leadership and perhaps the first whole treatise on what it means to be a just or good person, talked about four different kinds of virtues: wisdom, justice, temperance, and courage. And then Prudentius added to that the three major virtues of the New Testament: charity, hope, and faith,
okay.
And put together seven virtues and talked about them and how that they are a response to the seven deadly sins one-to-one.
All right. Professor Al Genie in studio. We've set up the seven deadly sins. We set up the seven heavenly virtues. When we come back, let's start getting into them. We've got, these are good, okay? Chastity, temperance, charity, diligence, patience, kindness, and humility. Boring. Professor Al Genie, the resident philosopher in the Download. Stay with us. It's Download here at 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman in studio with me tonight. Our regular philosopher, our resident philosopher.
I'm not regular, but I am resident. That's great. Thank you.
Al Genie is the... He's a professor of business ethics in the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University Chicago. And also, algenie.net. I don't do enough to give away your .net.
Well, thank you very much. I never thought I would wind up having a website, and I have to Twitter, too, because of my publishers. But, you know... And this is a new marketing age. Hey. I just thought you stood on the corner and said, buy the book, buy the book.
It works for Donald Trump. It could be your new day. Twitter could be your new day.
Perhaps now I'm going to stop immediately. We'll see what happens.
All right, so we're talking tonight about the seven heavenly virtues. Mm-hmm. We talked about the seven deadly sins not too long ago on the show, but we're bringing up the counterpoint.
Right, but let me reinforce something. By these seven heavenly virtues right now, counterpoint to seven deadly sins. Remember, these are human virtues. We associate them
heavenly
with
kind of throws it off.
It off, and certainly they are Christian, and certainly they are Catholic in their orientation. But these are virtues for human beings, and they've persisted over the years because they make sense. Now, start off with charity.
All right, charity, number one.
Being generous towards others, but kindness, the opposite of selfishness. In a very real sense, in Christian theology, though, caritas is the great love of God, is the pure love of another for only themselves and always giving to another. God's love, motherly love, parental love, right. That kind of thing. And when you think of charity here, what we're talking about is the opposite of greed, the opposite of excess, or opposite of materialism, the opposite of selfishness. And I think one of the problems of being an adult, there was a wonderful article in the New York Times this week about those minimal little homes that you bring out to, you know, someplace that are really two-room.
Those little tiny homes.
And I'm thinking about, what a wonderful thing. I've got a little piece of property. Maybe I'll just do that, and so it's not all this. And his comment was, life is about experience, not simply about collecting things. And at this point in my life, I collect so many things. You realize you've got to let go. One of the greatest things in life is to be able to let go. Take that.
But it's not just about letting go. It's also, in a way, about giving back.
Giving back and sharing. One of the most wonderful things for me at this point in my life, I'm able actually to tithe and to write that check every month. It is one of the most wonderful things to reach in my pocket and pick up a check. Now, my friends say I don't do it enough, but I have arthritis. My hand clutches up when the bill comes. I can't quite get into it.
But there's something to be said about, you know, because the word charity becomes charitable and then it becomes donation. It's not necessarily giving money.
No.
It's not saying you should give to charity. It's about the idea of giving back or giving of yourself.
Right. And I think it's giving yourself, being open to others. Charity is really being open to others. A wonderful example, one of my handball buddies mentioned I was leaving, you know, on a trip next week, so on and so forth. Before I got finished with the sentence, what day are you leaving? I could drive you. No, wait a minute. I'll just arrange it. Don't worry about it. I'm semi-retired. I could do this.
Right.
But this ability to stand outside of self and be concerned with others, this is not only a virtue that helps others, it's a virtue that helps ourselves. It's a virtue that gives us something back, too,
because we're
not totally concerned. And any parent who's really been involved with the child knows that. I just finished Scott Turow's new book, which I will get back to you with a great later. But he's talking about he has adult children in this novel, the character says, and he's wondering about should he marry this younger woman. He says, I would never want to cheat anyone of that wonderful experience of being a parent, that I loved my children so much I forgot any need that I might have, except the need to take care of myself so I could take care of my children. Yeah. A wonderful thing to think about.
I think a lot of people listening right now would feel that charity is very important.
Yes.
To them. That does, it not only is a great virtue, but it is probably the biggest when it comes to
living
defining,
with others.
But also defining yourself.
Right.
I mean, you give back. You feel like
that's
you're,
right.
Yeah.
And I think this is not esoteria. Very often we think of the virtues, or we'll say to somebody, a gluttony. Well, it's such a, you know, who's really guilty of gluttony? Well, a lot of us are when you really think about it. But this is hands-on. Can you be good to another?
All right, let's, and for the seven deadly sins, it's the opposite of greed, of course.
Right,
absolutely. Okay, so number two, chastity.
Right, and everyone stops at, oh, chastity, no, wait. No, we're not talking about celibacy here. This is an old-fashioned word, chastity.
Yeah, I have a hard time with the definition, like chastity.
Yes, and we're not talking about Chastity Bono right now either. We're talking about not being captive of one's desires. We're not talking about celibacy. We're talking about balance, wholeness, discipline. That is to have a little something called deferred gratification, which keeps coming up in all of these sins, by the way. To be able to be in control, the ability to overcome temptation, to show a little self-discipline. The opposite of lust, because lust is an obsession. We talked about addiction before. The sadness of addiction is you need that. You know, remember those, you may be too young. Remember those commercials that came on late night TV when people didn't switch between channels because you didn't have one of those remotes? They would say, on cocaine, would you lie for me? Yes. Would you steal from me? Yes. Would you would you
die
for me?
PSAs.
Yes. Yes, because the addiction was greater than anything else in your life. And the addiction, and everybody knows that someone really stretched out on heroin right now doesn't need to get high on the heroin. He gets normal or it just goes away. And so you obliviate yourself.
So chastity is really about self-discipline. We kind of have it as the opposite of lust, but it's also the opposite of addiction.
Right. But I think but lust is an addiction. I mean, one of the, I think, overrated, you know, I'm a sexual addict. Well, bravo. It used to be a joke, but it's not a joke. And I think that a lot of people are addicted to lots and lots of things, including our, shall we go across the street for a cafe latte noco doco dope with a double shot? 1750, thank you very much.
That's chastity, the opposite of lust. Let's get one more in before we hit the break.
Absolutely.
Let's get to diligence. Prudence.
Prudence. And again, bad word, right? Prudence, to be prudential. It's an archaic term. It's like, are you from Oxford? Is that really the word? Prudence, prudential. Quite so. It means being steadfast. It means being disciplined. It means living a life with others and recognizing that. It means an old-fashioned Roman word, Latin word. Integritas, to be balanced, to have all things together. And so I think diligence means that you are not, you know, you're being zealous in your actions. And it is the opposite of sloth. And we laugh about sloth, and is it a sloth or a sloth? And the sloth is the animal, and the sloth is this. But sloth is really laziness. Sloth is your soon-to-be 13-year-old teenager. You know, I remember going into my son's room on Saturday morning at 11 o'clock and putting a mirror under his nose to make sure he was breathing because he was, you know, so and now with my grandson at 12, what do you do? I'm tired.
But
I'm tired.
Diligence is also, I mean, you kind of used the phrase staying true to your core beliefs or like you said, integrity, the idea that you believe in something and it defines you
and,
you protect that.
These all reinforce each other. But diligence is the athletic commitment to do again and again and again and again. Anybody who's been a runner, and I thankfully don't have to run anymore, my knees are gone, was really a blessing when that finally happened. But I remember running, hitting the wall, keep going. But there was something... There was a rush in that.
Yeah.
There was, you know,
you were a runner.
And you were a runner, and you really want to do it. But you had to force yourself for that joy. You had to push yourself for that joy. And so I think diligence is a recognition that everything, you know, takes work. And it's not going to happen by sitting there waiting for it. You got to do something about it. It means you've got to have, you know, skin in the game.
All right. We've got through three of the seven virtues, charity, chastity, and diligence. We'll take a break. Coming up, humility, kindness. I feel like it's the all-star game of virtues. Coming up this inning, humility, kindness, and patience. All right, Dale Genie, our resident philosopher, business professor at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University, Chicago, with us. We'll take a break. We'll get an update on Rob's news. We'll come back and we'll continue the seven virtues. Stay with us. This is one of those new tracks for Professor Al Genie.
What is this?
It's a hot new track called Patience by Guns N' Roses. It's fun to watch the professor go, whoa, what is
this?
That's only a hit from 1988, but that's okay.
From 80 to 94, music did not exist for me. It was called Children.
It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Tonight, we're taking our shot at the seven virtues. We did the seven deadly sins a couple months back. We're countering with the seven virtues that make you a good person, make you whole. Professor Al Genie is the professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University of Chicago and also a resident philosopher here. Okay, so we've gotten through three of them so far.
Right.
Charity, chastity, and diligence. We're on to number four.
Humility.
Ooh, a good one.
Humility. And you know what? I've decided humility is this notion of knowing self, what Freud said, the hardest thing we could do in life is know ourselves and our strengths and our weaknesses and being able to do something about it. It's, of course, the Socratic adage, you know, the unexamined life isn't worth not worth living. And if you live that life, that means you're not living that life with your own sense of self. But more than that, I think humility is what Maslow means by self-actualization, that you know who you are. Not false pride, because it's the opposite of pride, which is vanity and arrogance. And, you know, and it's almost, the, in some sense, I think false pride is self-loathing. Because you have to lie about yourself all the time and embellish yourself. I think true humility is actually knowing you are and being aware of both your strengths and weaknesses and not being ashamed of that. On Terry Gross's show the other day, the chief ballerina for Ballantine was retiring, and she said, after 30 years. And she said, I entered the retirement first with fear and loathe and drugs, and then I processed my way through it, and I left And I'm glad I left, and I left with a sense of a spree, with a sense of having lived a good career, and not regretting it because I've done it all. Dan Hampton said the same thing when he retired. I left everything on the field. I don't feel bad at all. It's over. My body can't handle it anymore, right. And I had a great career. I think humility is self-awareness. And by the way, I also think there's something to it, and you could tie this to the temperance as well. Emotional intelligence. The more I think about it, I wrote a book on the 10 virtues of excellent leaders. But now I wish I had put emotional intelligence as the core uber virtue, that not only in control of yourself, but empathic to others. And so I think humility is control of self, being modest about self, but also being empathic towards others, understanding
and,
other people.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny because in that, I would think that when you talk about humility, you would talk about the opposite, which would be pride or even ambition in the way that, or this idea of almost like this uber ambition, like I'm gonna win at all points. You almost find that in humility, this idea, the opposite of humility is people that will almost inflate their self ego because they're hiding something or whatever, but that's how they make themselves feel better or how they have to push through.
And I think real humility is analogous to sports. It doesn't always happen in professional sports. When a teammate does well, you do well. And you're happy for the goodness of your teammate. That's the way you should feel about it. Mm-hmm. It's his home run, you run out there and you embrace them. But I think humility is understanding what you can do and how you fit and understanding and responding to the needs of others
as
well.
It's such an interesting, because you know, I have a 9-year-old son, and he was just in a school play and talked about on the show. And there was lessons in humility because so many of his parents, his grandparents, his teachers, you did such a good job. You're doing so great. And, you know, and then one point or another, we're in the car and he's like, well, I did such a great job, you know, and I said, yes, you did. But there's this thing called humility. And it's about understanding that, you know, you don't necessarily think of yourself the way that other people give you compliments.
Right. And it's a tough one. My mother always said that if you brag about yourself, you don't have nothing to brag about. And then Joe Namath said, it ain't bragging if it's the truth. You know, you actually do.
Right.
So
there's a real, but
I think humility doesn't have the need to always exert self to be the center of attention. Hi, I've just spent an hour talking about me. Now let me stop and why don't you talk about me for a while again? I think humility says, I'm part of this. I'm not all of this, but I'm happy for what I am.
All right, let's move on to number 5, kindness.
Yes. And that seems so obvious, doesn't it?
Right.
Being kind, being good towards life. I think really kindness is openness to the well-being of others. Again, emotional intelligence comes in. Openness to the well-being of others. Recognizing that you're not the center of the room. Recognizing that people need something. It's called empathy. It's called being empathic.
It seems like you find empathy sort of shows up in
everywhere.
A lot of these.
I mean, it's stepping away from self, stepping away from self, stepping away from self, stepping away from self. There's the other joke about the two mezzo sopranos meeting on the street. How are you? I'm fine. How are you? I'm fine. You know, they're both singing about this. I think that it's a lack of envy. When two academics meet, and I say this with embarrassment but truth. When two academics meet, my best friend, Ron Green, whom I love, I mean, I love this man. I would die for this man. Not soon, not unnecessarily, but I love this man. I say, Ron, how are you? He says, I just had a paper published here. I'm giving a talk there. My new book is coming out then. Now, I'm guilty of it too, and you've known me for a long time. That's how we demonstrate our worth, by demonstrating our curriculum.
What we've done.
Right. But I think the real kindness is being empathic to the saying, I know what I've done. What have you done? I know I feel when I do something well. What have you done? So I think it's the opposite of envy, and I'm not jealous of your accomplishments.
So kindness is really about wishing the best for everyone.
Yes, and not being jealous of them.
Because a lot of times I think kindness being, and I guess this gets confused, because kindness I would think is helping someone out or, you know, helping an old lady cross the street or, you know, giving to someone who might be less fortunate, like on the street, like homeless or something. But kindness really in this form as a virtue is about wishing the best for others.
I think that's absolutely, absolutely the case. And I think it is the opposite of jealousy and the opposite of covetousness, and that you are willing to give up and give away and not be envious of others. I remember a friend telling me that in a second marriage, that the father the wife was dead, his mother was dead, was not happy with the marriage. And I said, why? He said, well, why should you be happy when I'm not?
Yeah, right?
Envy.
Envy.
And it It's a worm that
so
eats
kindness
us.
Is the opposite of
yeah,
anger.
Yeah.
All right, let's keep going. We're going down to the final two here. Let's go to this one. This one's important. This one, patience.
Yeah. It is the opposite of anger. It's the opposite of fury. It's the opposite of demanding. It's called forbearance. It's something I just learned last year. And because my brother asked, my body forced me to learn the lesson.
Right.
That you can't force life. You have to be patient with life. That you can't make demands of life all the time. And that doesn't mean you shouldn't put your best foot forward. That doesn't mean you shouldn't seek. That doesn't mean you shouldn't try. But I think patience is being peaceful about
that's and such accept, a hard
and
one. Accept,
it's about accepting life. And I think, and I've learned this from people, not just in my own life. I mean, I've learned this from the pain of others. People who have terminal illness or debilitating illnesses. He said, well, you know, I mean, this one chap said to me, it was wonderful. He said, well, I had 68 years of absolute, never been sick a day in my life, and now my body's failing me. Well, I got 68 more than I thought. And he really meant that with a true acceptance of what was going on. Now, I don't think this is just, this is a way to just put a mustard patch on a wound. I think real patience is recognizing that you can't always force things, mm-hmm. that you can't always seek things, that you have to let things happen. And I think, again, the parent model, you can't force that child to be. My father was so disappointed in me because I wasn't the athlete he needed me to be.
As you say that, I wonder where does the idea is the fall under patience, the idea of letting things go?
Yeah. And I think you have to be careful because letting things go also could mean you're loathsome and you're guilty of sloth. But I think letting things go is recognizing I've done everything I possibly can here. Now I have to let it go. Now I have to let, you know, again, Scott Turow's book. He wants to marry this woman. He says, now you have to make this decision.
Right.
Do you want to have children? He says to this young woman. He says, well, can we talk about this? He says, no, this is not about me. This is about you, and you have to make that decision, and then we'll decide if it's possible.
So, if patience is one of those virtues where you want to let it go, but you let it go in a way that it just is really just deferring a decision or something you have to do, then you're really fooling you're going into sloth territory.
They're going sloth territory. I think real patience is my son or my daughter. I love her partner. I love Dan. But if she comes home with somebody who's absolutely anathema, ass, I don't like him at all, I can only kindly say it once to them. Are you sure about this? Because all of a sudden you've got a 35-year-old saying, yeah, pretty sure, Dad. I'm an adult. I can handle this. So patience. And I think patience, the simplest phrase, letting go. Be natural. Let it go. Always involved. But after a while, you let go. I sent my children to college. I couldn't make them PhDs. I couldn't make them an author. I sent them to college. I gave them the opportunity. That's the patience that we're talking about.
Al Jeanie is my guest tonight. We're talking about the seven virtues, sort of a contrast to the seven deadly sins that we talked about a couple months back. And we wrap up the seven virtues with our final virtue, the seventh on the list, temperance.
Yes, and this is some sense redundant because we're talking about restraint. We're talking about mindfulness. We're talking about overcoming, our deferring gratification. I think what we're talking about here, again, is emotional intelligence, being placed, being comfortable. There's something very, when you analyze all these, there's something very Buddhist about this. The seven steps of Buddhism. There's something very important about the central part for Buddhism is you can't force life. You don't have to like it, but you have to accept it. And I think temperance is also that. Being in control of self, doing the best one can, but knowing you can't ever do it.
What I like about this one, and just from the notes as well, is that you say realizing the legitimacy in several points of view. And we see that play out now where, whether it be political or even social, we get a point of view, we stick on it, nothing else matters. No one else's point of view matters.
Right. I think
it has to happen.
I think we bastardize the notion of rugged individualism, that everyone has the right to their own opinion and everyone is absolutely right. That can't be true. But we also have to allow the others. The polls are out this week. We're becoming more and more divided about the opposite. I think we have to recognize there's a certain legitimacy. I did not vote for the president, but I understand why people did. No, let's forget everything that's going on right now, what I would like. I understand why people, they wanted change. They wanted something different. They were tired, they're tired of the same old gang. Here's a woman who's been in politics, Bush, and there was a possibility the presidential election was between a Clinton and a Bush. In other words, two families. Are we an oligarchy or are we a democracy? I understand why people said, damn them
enough
all.
Enough of that. Yeah.
Enough of that. Let's try something different.
And that plays to a virtue, temperance, to understand. Again, we're back to empathy. We're back to this idea.
Doesn't mean you have to understand it.
You don't have to agree, but you have to understand.
I understand.
Right.
Even talking about drugs before. I understand. I have a couple of friends who are alcoholics. I understand why they're alcoholics. Because alcohol for them is a way of not dealing with a certain ugliness in life. That film that everyone praised, Manchester by the Sea.
Yeah.
Of course he's miserable. He killed his children.
Hey, spoiler alert.
I'm sorry. No one should go see that film. It's too painful. And they won the awards and he deserved it.
When is the expiration date on a spoiler alert? I'm never going to see it, so it's okay.
But
you're right.
But
yeah.
Right. I mean, there's no miserable way. He's never going to say, well, I'm going to self-actualize myself. I'm going to go to meetings and I'm going to become an outgoing person and love again. Are you kidding that he's breathing is a marvelous enterprise?
And I mean, and not only understanding or realizing the legitimacy of different points of view, but it's also in your own way maintaining neutrality in this way that you're not necessarily always just off on one side and it's my way or the highway.
Right.
There has to be some sort of neutral court in which you live your life.
Right. And I think that if you want to claim the right to free speech and free thought, you have to allow that right with others. And I think temperance gives us, again, this Buddhist notion of you have to let go. You have to allow others to be other. And I think I've allowed you to be an other tonight, and I think you've done very well.
We got all seven.
I do think you do specialize in sloth, but your wife sent me a couple of notes in this regard. Laziness and idleness seems to be your cup of tea.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think these are real issues. They're just not philosophical ideas. A lot of people think philosophy is, you know, either how many angels could dance on the head of a pin or brain surgery. First of all, three. Angels can dance on every pin.
You guys have come together on
right,
that.
Thank
right.
You. We're excited about that. And brain surgery is much more complicated than we ever thought. But I don't think philosophy is this abstract. I think philosophy is about ideas that motivate us in life and ideas that give us a better handle in life. And the seven deadly things are something to avoid. And I think the seven charities are something to approach.
There you go. Professor Al Genie, professor of business ethics in the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University of Chicago, also a resident philosopher here. We will talk with you next month, bud.
Absolutely. See you soon.
Great comments on the text tonight. You and the professor have done it again. Give me something worthwhile to think about. I caught his discussion on the seven deadly sins, and we're definitely downloading tonight's discussion. Great segment. Hope you separate out for the podcast. A lot to think about. Great. And then I can't believe he gave away the plot of the movie. But, you know, I will say to that, and I would rather talk about the seven virtues than about Manchester by the Sea, but it's the plot. Meaning that, you know, I haven't even seen the movie and I knew that was the plot, you know, meaning there's twists in the movie that people, but the
I mean,
plot
you
is,
know, there's
you know,
a
right
death,
at
you know,
yeah.
But
all right, we'll
it comes
talking.
Into play towards the end. Over the weekend, you know, I live up near, you know, Loyola University, and a few times I saw people with Loyola Quinlan School of Business sweatshirts, and I was, hey, Al Genie! And I got, I thought like I was just like some crazy person like yelling out names. And Molly, my wife, was like, "What?
Why do you yell someone's name at somebody wearing a sweatshirt?" Oh, I love it. I would do the same thing. All right, coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, we have great. I mean, this is going to be a great coming up. Uri Lane and Parker Reed are going to be in the Human Beatboxes live performance tonight. I mean, Human Beatbox is kind of made for radio. You know, I mean, think about it. I don't know. I would think that that's, I mean, yes, it's great to see. And I've performed with Uri many a times in my life. It's awesome. Brings the house down every time. But I mean, could you think of a better way to celebrate the art of the beatbox than to do it on AM radio? I feel like it's kind of the go-to. Also tonight, Hamilton Lighthouser is going to be here, the former frontman of the Walkmen. He is playing at Pitchfork solo. And he just did a collaborative record with Rossum from Vampire Weekend, which is one of the best. Across the board, all the research of it, one of the best records of 2016. And I have to say, I love it. You know, I'm not a huge, I mean, that New York scene, that sound, that sort of like 50s, 60s soul kind of resurgence kind of thing, like real almost like overmodulated kind of sound that they do out of there. The indie rock scene that comes out of there. He nails it. This record's awesome. I mean, I'm way late to it. It was like the end of 2016, so I'm already like 6 months out, but I love it. And I'm glad that we have him on the show for our Pitchfork week. So yesterday we had Glenn Mercer from the Feelies. Hamilton Lighthouser joins us tonight. Coming up on Thursday. You ready for this? George Clinton. Parliament Funkadelic. George Clinton going to be on the program. He's headlining at Pitchfork. Join us to talk about his career. How amazing is that? What a great... I mean, think about like all the artists that are going to be at Pitchfork. And you think about, they're like LCD Sound System, Solange, Tribe Called Quest. And down the list a little bit, they're like George Clinton.
Yeah.
Like, this is the Hall... I mean, maybe the only Hall of Famer that's on the bill? Like the Rock and Roll Hall of Famer that would be at the Pitchfork?
Yeah, I would imagine so.
Maybe there's some other people I'm not thinking about, but pretty awesome to have him on the show.
Yeah.
I'm so excited about it. I remember, I think it was 1997, New Year's Eve. Big party at the house, 3-bedroom, nailing it. Lots of great people at the house before internet. Had to make landline phone calls to get everybody out. You know how it goes.
Oh, man.
And I remember it hit New Year's, and everyone did their throw confetti and sing. And my buddy Mike, my roommate, he said, "All right, this song is for 1997. You guys ready?" And then it was One Nation Under Groove, George Clinton, P-Funk, Parliament Funkadelic, and that set the tone for the entire year.
For the entire year.
That's what he was trying to
do. The way to do it.
Yeah, and then it was a George Clinton year. I ended up seeing him at the Riv, I think, later that year, the Mothership, and I remember counting, there were 23 people on stage, including Bootsy Collins. Anyway, George Clinton coming up on the show. But that's Thursday. Tonight, coming up right after the news, Human Beatbox. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It's The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin, and from the Chicago Beatbox Collective, this is Paris Reed and Yuri Lane.
Download. Something like this. Hit it.
Yuri Lane and Ferris Reed from the Chicago Beatbox Collective in studio tonight. Coming up this weekend, Night Out in the Parks continues in Chicago parks all over. Performances, theater, musicians, artists. It's free, and it's taking arts and culture into the neighborhoods. These two guests are performing at Lindblom Park at 60th and Damon. Is on Saturday night, Yuri?
It is Friday at 5 p.m.
Good to see you, buddy.
Yeah, great to see you, Justin.
How you been?
I've been really great. Summer is the best time in Chicago. Michigan, going to the beach, performing at different festivals. I played Taste of Chicago and ate a lot of delicious Chicago deep dish pizza and got to perform on stage. It was a blessing.
So you got Friday night at Lindblom, and then you're also going to be at Belmont Cragen Park on Thursday the 20th. You brought along one of your members of the Chicago Beatbox Collective, Paris Reed. Paris, thanks for being here.
No problem. Thanks for having
me here. So let's talk about, you're a mainstay here. We've had you on the program before, but I mean,
yes.
let's refresh everybody's memory. How'd you get into the wide world of beatboxing?
Well, I started out as an actor and started doing film, television, and theater, and always had a love for hip-hop. Would beat the sounds of the radio. Would be told to turn off the radio during class because I was... And I just kept beatboxing, kept making music with my mouth. And I started doing these solo beatbox plays. And then I moved to Chicago in 2003 and just felt the blues. And so I've been really combining the blues and hip hop, combining these two incredible art forms. As we know, everything comes from the blues. So combining the blues and hip hop seems really natural. And so I started really playing the harmonica and combining both the harmonica and the beatbox.
It's unbelievable. You got to see it. If you haven't seen Uri Lane with his harmonica beatboxing through a harmonica, you have not lived. Paris Reed. Paris is similar. So how'd you get into beatboxing?
YouTube. You know, I saw like a lot of videos on YouTube and I got inspired and I started beatboxing. And then I found out that there was a community like here in the United States, and I started joining battles, you know, going to events, and you know, got my first trophy last year, second place. So that put a good stamp on in Chicago. And I found out about Uri as well, you know.
Yeah, right, Chicago Beatbox Limited. You know, we're a collective of beatboxers and hip hop artists. We have beatboxers from age 45 to 25. We've got breakdancers and drummers and opera singers, and we just bring everyone together, and I conduct a beatbox symphony. It's all organic. It's all music made from your nose, your teeth, your tongue, your throat, and your diaphragm. And the great thing is it's free. All you need is rhythm.
How do you teach that? I mean,
how do you teach that? I'm going to teach you right now. Justin, say, boom, boom, cup of tea.
Boom, boom, cup of tea.
Boom, boom, cup of tea. Boom, boom, crash.
Boom, boom, cup of tea. Boom, boom, crash.
Now, when you take out all the vowels, it sounds like this. Right? So there it is, beatbox.
That's it.
So it's a lot of consonants and elongated vowels. And all you
do is
you just feel the beat inside you, and the brain sends messages to your lips, and you just start busting
beats. When you're going to go out to Lindblom Park and Belmont Cragen Park to play a night out in the parks with the Chicago Park District, I mean, are you going out by yourself? I mean, you guys are doing it together. I mean, do you bring
the whole crew of beatboxers, GQ the teacher, Andrzone. Different guest artists are going to be coming. We're going to be vibing together. I'm going to be providing beats using my live loop station.
You're really excited about this.
I'm super excited about it. And we're just taking it into the community. I'm really looking for other young, aspiring beatboxers and hip-hop artists, and hopefully I can inspire them. And they can join the collective. And that's what it's all about. And bringing beatbox into the communities that need it, because it's free and all you need is imagination.
And a harmonica.
And a harmonica, yeah. Shall I bust some harmonica?
Yeah, let's hear Uri Lane live here on the download tonight. Here he goes.
That's the beatbox harmonica.
That's so great. I never gets tired, man. I swear to God, we've done countless performances together in Chicago. And every time you do that, it brings the house down. People are, I mean, you can see the window in front of Michigan Avenue right now. There's a ton of people that are watching you. I mean, it's such a talent and such a skill to be able to watch you and other beatbox performers work. It's something special. Uri Lane, also Paris Reed in studio. We're going to hear from Paris coming up here. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. Uri Lane and Paris Reed will be part of the Chicago Beatbox Limited that will be all over Chicago night out in the parks. They got one coming up at Lindblom Park, 60th and Damon on Friday night, and then Belmont Cragen Park on Thursday the 20th. Some stuff in later in the summer.
In the summer, yes. I'm going to be part of Peacebook. Yep. And so I'm just, you know, it's just great to come into the community in Chicago and be part of such a wonderful artistic community.
More Beatbox with Yuri and Paris coming up. Stay with us. In studio tonight, Yuri Lane and Paris Reed, members of the Chicago Beatbox Limited. They'll be playing this weekend, Friday night, at the Lindblom Park as part of the Night Out in the Parks, Chicago Park District.
That's right.
Performances, theater performances, musicians, artists. It's free. It's all around parks of Chicago. It's been going on for a couple years now.
5 years.
Yeah,
now.
It's this a great 5 year great thing, and it would be awesome to go down and see you guys perform. Paris, let me turn to you. You know, I mean, for Yuri having the harmonica and what was your thing? It's not just straight beatbox. You can't just be a straight beatbox anymore, right? You got to have something. What's yours?
Yeah, I got a bit of like a EDM style mix, and I combine singing as well with stuff. You know, I like to make a lot of originals, but I do covers as well.
Are you? I mean, I guess that begs a question about like the schools of beatbox. Is there an old school and a new school? I mean, do you find yourself with like being a younger gentleman? Do you find yourself adding and changing the art form?
Yeah, I can see myself doing that. You know, I still like a lot of old songs, but you'll catch me throwing, you know, a new age twist on it, you know, adding a little flavor, a little spice.
Is this the kind of thing, I mean, obviously you're playing in the parks coming up here, but is this the kind of thing that you know, because you don't have to necessarily, you don't have to bring the guitar, lug your guitar everywhere. I mean, you were talking about your looping machine. You got an amp as well, Yuri. But gives you a chance to gig a lot. Can you go to open mics? Can you go to different places and beatbox wherever, whenever your heart desires?
Yeah, you pretty much can. You know, it's the best thing out there. You know, you can go down on the blue line. You see a guy on the playing the guitar on the jump on the mic with him, you know, if you wanted to, because it's right there, your walking instrument, which is like the best thing about it.
Yeah, it's a portable instrument, you know.
That's great.
You can take it wherever you go. And, you know, when we're walking down the street, we don't just have a conversation. We like to beatbox. We like to have our conversation and
Yuri Lane and Paris Reed. All right, Paris, can we get some sample of your work?
Yeah, I can show you a little something.
Drop a P Red.
Live your life, live your life. Be lip deep and pipe. Beautiful from people.
Break it down, P Red.
Club it out.
For Paris, you guys, you like it? Yeah, look at that, you got a whole crowd out there. That's great. There you go. Paris Reed, Yuri Lane from Chicago Beatbox Limited. They'll both be in Lindblom Park coming up 60th and Damon this Friday night. Also Belmont Cragen Park on Thursday the 20th of July.
Yes.
Some other stuff September, but also Peacebook, which
Peacebook,
is the
August 26th
Collabor Action Festival.
That's right, at Goodman Theater, kicking off the festival.
Really?
At Goodman Theater.
Wow, there you go.
Yeah,
that's
written
great.
Up in the New York Times. They recommended the festival. It's great to bring peace and to try to solve the violence and solve the problems that poor neighborhoods and that are dealing with, and we can do it with the arts.
Yeah, we had Anthony and the crew on for Peace Book.
Wonderful.
You know, as you know, we get ready to wrap up because I want to get you both to do something together.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the art form, as you said, it's a portable art form, and it's one that's based in hip hop. Where is it at? I mean, when you talk about it, sort of the respect level. I mean, because you'll have DJs, you have MCs, you have other beatbox used to be a thing that everybody was into in the 80s. It was like, oh, I can't believe a guy gets on a mic and he can create his own beats. But when you talk about the art form in the sort of evolution of hip hop, where is it at right now? Who's doing it well?
Oh, well, we are in kind of a renaissance right now, beatbox. As Paris was saying, there's a competitive beatbox world. There's the International Beatbox Competition in Berlin. You've got the American Beatbox Championships in New York. You've got the Midwest Beatbox Championships in Ohio. Shut Your Mouth and Beatbox. We've got beatboxers from Paris, from London, from South Korea, from China, and from Chicago, from San Francisco, all over the world. It's worldwide. I kind of like to say that the new DJ is the beatboxer. And it's really limitless. And a lot of the young beatboxers today are really emulating the sounds of trap, the sounds of EDM. They can manipulate their voice and create that music.
Does it blow your mind?
It does blow my mind. You know, I get inspired by the new generation, and that's what's so great. And it's ageless. You know, beatbox is, it really starts when you're a baby. You just start making sounds. And I just never stop making those sounds, right? So when babies just start, they're speaking my language. They're beatboxing. And so when I'm working with Paris, who's much younger than me, but we vibe together because we have this rhythm that we share, and I learn from him, he learns from me, we inspire each other.
Well, let's hear some Paris Reed and Yuri Lane from Chicago Beatbox Limited.
Beatbox! They're going to
be Lindblom Park, 60th and Damon, this Friday night, Belmont Cragen on the 20th of July. Here they are, Yuri Lane, Paris Reed in studio. Yes, give it up out there. There we go. Look at that. You've got a whole crowd out there that's cheering you guys on. Yuri Lane, Paris Reed, part of the Chicago Beatbox Limited. Like I said, they'll be playing Lindblom Park at 60th and Damon coming up on Friday night. And they'll also be at Belmont Cragen Park on Thursday the 20th. It's all part of Night Out in the Parks by the Chicago Park District's performances, theater, music, art, all free throughout the summer, different parks in different Chicago neighborhoods. Yuri, Paris, great to see you guys.
Thank you so much. Follow me on Instagram, Beatbox Harmonica Man.
Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. Well, the Pitchfork Music Festival is taking over Union Park this weekend. The festival starts on Friday, and it features headliners, Solange, A Tribe Called Quest, and LCD Sound System. On Sunday night, my next guest will be on stage, the solo indie rock sounds of Hamilton Lighthouser.
I had a dream that you were mine. I've had that dream a thousand times. A thousand times, a thousand times, I've had that dream.
a thousand times.
Hamilton Lighthouser is a New York-based singer-songwriter by way of Washington, D.C. He was the frontman of the Walkmen, which are currently on hiatus. Lighthouser teamed up with Rostam, formerly of Vampire Weekend, to collaborate on the album I Had a Dream, You Were Mine, which was considered one of the best of 2016. Lighthouser will be on stage at 4:15 on Sunday at Pitchfork. But first, he's my guest tonight on The Download. Hamilton, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
You come to Chicago a lot, I would assume, not only with your solo work, but with the Walkmen. Talk about playing Chicago. What's it mean to you to be back at the Pitchfork Music Festival?
I would say, in all honesty, that most of my favorite memories of ever being in a band take place in Chicago. It was always like the first place that we felt, the first town that ever embraced the Walkmen. Like, before we put out our first record, we played down at like the Empty Bottle, and it was like one of the only places in the country that went well. And so from there on out, it was always like this sort of home away from home. And then actually my sister lived there for about 7 years while we were touring through. So it was always like it was sort of a home base for me for a long time.
The Walkmen came through and played Pitchfork at one point, and you know, you play a lot outdoors and festivals. Talk about as a solo artist and having having to get up on stage in front of a festival crowd outside. Do you change the way you approach your music when you have to perform in that kind of venue as opposed to the Empty Bottle?
I was playing at the Roskilde Festival outside of Copenhagen last week.
Yeah.
And I went on stage at something like 11 p.m., and right across from me was the XX. I was playing against the XX, and they have these, like, sub-bass songs that are so loud.
Right.
And I was really trying to go for this nuanced thing. I mean, I have a lot of quieter material that I really like playing. And I think in the old days, we would have just thrown the quiet stuff out and just kicked the doors down for an hour. But I just stuck with it, and I was glad I did. I think it was a little rumbly, and it was a little funny, but no, I sort of am a little more stubborn these days, and I just stick with the game plan.
That's hard at a fest. You're right, because they set those stages up adjacent to each other, and you'll have like hardcore rap stage.
Every once in a while you run into one of these things, and it's a little funny.
On this tour, talk about what you bring with when you play at Pitchfork. I mean, because you've done the collaboration with Rostam, you've done other stuff, but what do we see when you bring the band and bring the music to Chicago?
I have a touring band of all guys from other bands that I've met over the year, a guy from Spoon and two guys from the White Rabbit right now, and I'm actually hiring an extra guy. So I'll have a 5-piece band, and we play most of the stuff off the new record. I play a couple older ones, and actually I have all these brand new songs. I was thinking about debuting one or two of them at the Pitchfork Festival.
Do you like to do?
To be seen.
Yeah, I was going to say. I mean, is that something that at that high profile of a place like Pitchfork that you feel?
We did it last time we were there. I remember we debuted our song "Stranded" there, the Walkman song,
wow.
And it was fun. It gets on the internet. That's the kind of thing that people start hearing your song for the first time.
Right, right.
So you kind of want to make sure you're ready. I'm actually, this week, I'm sort of figuring out whether or not I'm going to do that.
What do you have to do to get ready? I mean, is it just a matter of arrangements and rehearsals?
I don't know. Psych yourself up. Look in the mirror. You know, give yourself a couple winks.
Right. As you know, you talked about your time with the Walkman, and you guys were able to create such a distinct sound. To move on and have a solo career, especially one that you collaborate with a lot of artists, do you find yourself like finding yourself doing a different kind of sound than, you know, the collaborations of the past when you let yourself be a solo artist?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, every time you have another strong personality writing the music or even just playing in the room with you, everything, it can change the sound dramatically. And so, you know, working with the guys in the Walkman, we had our sound, and we really developed it over the years and had a very signature sound. And when I worked with Rostam, that was just turned on its head, and it sounds completely different. Nobody would ever mistake one record.
Right.
Nobody would ever think that sounds like Walkman record. Right now I'm working alone, and it sounds different than either of the others, because I've never been the guy in charge of all the instruments. I've always been sort of the front man and play the guitar a little bit. But now I've got all the drums and the works under my command, and so it definitely has its own sound again.
As an artist, when you work in that kind of form, especially in collaboration with other artists, and there might be other dominant personalities in the room, is it hard to get used to that? I mean, once you know your role, like you said, you knew your role as the front man, but now that all bets are off and you're a solo artist and you're working with other great artists, whether they be guitar players or singers or songwriters, do you find yourself, I mean, is that a challenge as an artist to let yourself be open to that?
Well, the hardest thing for me was, like, when I started out, was, like, trying to, I mean, I've been doing this for a long time, so trying to develop like a new personality and like a new it's still me, and I all those songs in the Walkman, I was a big part of writing all those, and so to come up with this clean break was really difficult and sort of like a little bit contrived at first. And then I think I found a balance, and I think by the time I got to the end of my first record and then on the second record here, I think I found like my own voice independent of the voice that I had all those years.
Yeah.
I mean, it's always going to be the same guy. It's just, it's hard to sort of like justify why you're making a record outside of the Walkman. So it's got to be, there's got to be a reason. And there's got to be, it's not just different. It's got to have its own justification for existing.
The music, I mean, especially on I Had a Dream, You Were Mine, I mean, there's a rock soul sound to it, very 50s, 60s style. I mean, there's been a lot of reviews to point this out, but I mean, what gravitates you to that sound, the sound of the constructed, you know, almost perfect rock soul sound from the 50s, 60s?
In the 50s, I mean, so much of my favorite music and recording sounds come from the 50s, so that's just a no-brainer. I mean, Rostam too, so that's where we meet. And we didn't even talk about it, but we both know, I knew Vampire Weekend, he knew the Walkman, we both know the other guy loves everything from the 50s. The soul music, one night working on some, it was really early on, I think it was even the first time we got together, and we were working on the song When the Truth Is, and I had some singing, and I had it, was going, it was sort of sounding good, but we cut out for the night, and I went back to my room and I watched the Muscle Shoals documentary that came out a couple years ago.
Right.
And I just got so fired up watching all those people. You know, they can just belt it out and just spark, and they're so great. And the next day we got up and we started working early in the morning, and it was like, you know, 7:45 in the morning, and I was like, all right, I got this. And we just went for it, and that brought like a big soul singer kind of barky sound, which I was really proud of, actually. I was drowning out the night with the last of the ones, and my story began to unwind. So I gathered all the shards of a glass from the bar, and I left from 17th Street the same monsters.
The Walkman, of course, lore of being a part of a New York scene and the aughts and the bands like the Strokes and Yeah Yeahs and all the others that were in there. You guys were a part of that scene. And being a solo artist and staying in New York City and having the ability to play with Rostam from Vampire Weekend or being able to cross over and continue to collaborate with New York musicians, what's it mean to be a part of that scene when you're not in the Walkman, when you're an artist that looks to collaborate with others?
Well, you know what the thing is that back when I was younger, in about, whatever, 1990, the second half of the 90s and the early 2000s, there were so many bands around, and I was really was friends with a lot of these people, and they'd have practice spaces where you did, and you'd run into these people everywhere. And at some point, maybe it was when I had kids, everybody left, and everybody has left New York. And New York is really, I think that the real reason is, in the end, because New York is a really tough city to be a musician in anymore, because it's just so expensive. It's so hard to find a practice space that you can afford where there's not some heavy metal drummer literally on the other side of a piece of drywall all day, every day. And I've been down that road for like 15 years, so I've had you know, hundreds of practice spaces around the city. And I think what it really comes down to is that it's kind of priced a lot of most of the musicians out. I mean, when I go to Nashville and L.A. and Montreal and stuff now, and I run into another person, and I think, oh, my God, you live here, too? And, you know, I realize they've left, and I really don't run into that many musician friends anymore in New York.
And I guess you don't have to, because the ability to collaborate online even is available that wasn't necessarily available 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah, well, that, you know, we did that a lot in the later days of the Walkman, but in the end, it's so much better to be in the room together. I thought Rossum and I were going to do that when we got together. I figured that we were going to pick up where the Walkman left off and we'd be emailing ideas back and forth, and we actually didn't do that. We actually got into the room and wrote everything right there together for 4 or 5 days. And then we'd just be exhausted, and then I'd fly home for 6 weeks. And we really wouldn't – okay, you'd have a bounce to listen to, but you wouldn't – we wouldn't really email. Occasionally, I'd send an idea back and forth, but we'd kind of wait until the next time I got there.
Yeah.
And then we'd pick it up, and we'd do it together in the room again. And that's like how you just bring a lot more life to it.
Well, you can hear it. I Had a Dream, You Were Mine, considered one of the best albums of 2016. Hamilton Lighthouser, who teamed up with Rostam, formerly of Vampire Weekend. Hamilton's going to be at the Pitchfork Music Festival coming up on Sunday. Thanks so much, Hamilton Lighthouser, for joining us tonight and taking some time out. We appreciate it.
All right. Nice to talk to you.
I live in a nameless town. No need to want. I live in a nameless town, in a blackout. Many friends have said goodbye. Hurry it out in one proud line. I said it.
Playing the worst coming up here on the download. Elizabeth Gomez and Soli Santos will be in studio to stand-up performers here in Chicago. You know what's the worst, Pete? When you miss the best news story of the day. Across the board. I blame it on Donald Trump Jr. The BBC News is reporting that the first object has been teleported. Chinese researchers have teleported a photon from the Gobi Desert to a satellite orbiting 500 kilometers above the Earth. This is achieved through quantum entanglement, a process where two particles react as one with no physical connection between them. A professor says, tells the world, and nah, it's a podcast or whatever, but the point being, teleported. They teleported an item, a physical item, from the ground to a satellite.
Yeah, this is going to open travel.
Think about how much money that's going to cost us. You could do first class teleportation, business class, economy.
Oh, yeah.
United Airlines is like, I will take that technology from you. Now, that's amazing, man. What a story. I mean, obviously Star Trek and teleporting has been a huge thing for sci-fi geeks for years. The idea that scientists are actually getting to a point where they can do it. I mean, I don't know what a photon is.
Uh-huh.
I'm assuming it's like a very, 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 very small particle, you know? But point being, they did it.
Mm-hmm.
What have you done? The worst is when you miss a great story like that that will change the world we live forever because of an email chain about a Russian meeting.
Keep this in mind for a week in review.
Yeah.
A story that will be relevant in
absolutely
500 years.
Absolutely nailed it. Randy Bellisoma is going to join us on Week in Review coming up on Friday, too. She'll love this one. This is mine. I'm already letting you know. This is my which story is going to be remembered in 500 years. This week, the first object teleported to Earth's orbit. Wow. I mean, I just think about my morning commute. It's not even a morning commute, my evening commute when I'm stuck in traffic, mm-hmm. maybe on a Wacker Drive, and you're like, how am I going to get from Monroe to work? It's only a 3-minute drive that's going to take 25 minutes. This traffic is backed up. I got to get in for the start of the show. Teleport.
It's happening.
Because you know it's going to start short. It can only gonna be like 6 to 8 blocks at a time. You know, it'll almost be like a hop, skip, and a jump. That's the name of our company trademark. Hop, skip, and a jump, the teleportation company.
But are we totally skipping flying cars? Is that it?
I'm okay with that.
Because I guess they'll still have traffic. It'll just be in right. the air as yeah. opposed to on the ground level.
What Back to the Future 2 showed us, and even Star Wars, I forgot the ones with Jar Jar Binks or whatever you call those, 4, 5, and 6.
Mm-hmm.
Or I think they would be 1, 2, and 3.
Mm-hmm.
They show a world where there's flying cars and it's always super crazy congested. So no thanks. Skip that. Go right to transport. Right?
Yeah. People still be late.
Sorry, my transporter was acting up. Because you probably have to book time. You know, it almost be like...
It's something.
Try to get it because you have to lock in the coordinates. I've seen enough Star Trek. You got to lock in the coordinates, Spock. There's not enough fuel, Jim. Isn't that?
I have close? No idea.
Sure, I don't think we can make it, Jim. That was my Star Trek.
I can talk about Cheers.
Bill Leff would be very happy with me with my Star Trek references. He's Mr. TV. Bill and Wendy, they're all over TV. I love listening to them when they have the gentleman on who talks television. They love
Kurt Wagner.
Yeah, Wagner. Yeah.
Who is 100 feet tall? I'll have you know.
I did not know that. That's not sound 100 feet tall.
No, I didn't. I didn't know that. I've seen his picture on the website, just from the neck up. And I was here. We were here on Friday early, or for I don't know. I had a meeting early, and then he was here with Bill and Wendy. And I went upstairs, and I was like, "Who is this gigantic human being walking into the studio?" I'm like, "Oh my god, I know that face. That's Kurt Wagner, TV aficionado for the Bill and Wendy show."
There you go. You learn something new every day.
Mm-hmm.
You learn about the heights of the stars.
Hope that's not a spoiler. Hope that doesn't like ruin anything for anybody.
You're gonna have another early morning meeting. We need to talk about you spoiling the height. The height of Mr. Wagner. Coming up, we're going to play the worst. Are you guys ready? 312-981-7200. You know what's the best? Is that this week's worst has the best stuff to give away. We are giving away a pair of tickets to the 10th annual Chicago Blackhawks convention at the Hilton Chicago Hotel between July 21st and 23rd. How about that? We're giving away a pair of tickets to that. So all you have to do is complain about the worst thing that happened to you today, and there's a chance that you can get tickets to the Blackhawks convention. That's so easy. 312-981-7200. That is coming up after Rob's news at 10 o'clock. You know what's the worst, Rob?
Cats. No. What's the worst?
I was going to say a low-scoring pitcher's duel all-star game.
Yeah, that's right.
Those are the worst. Like, all right, you know, okay, I get it. Every batter is overwhelmed by these pitchers breaking ball, but it's so annoying.
And you're Joe Buck trying to retain as many viewers as possible on Fox right now. That was a man. Yeah.
This is quite a game.
Motioning over to the stats guy. Get me something. I need something. Anything.
It's 1-1.
Yeah.
Oh, so boring. What happened to the days when, like, I made jokes earlier, but like Freddie Lynn in a 1983 All-Star game, and it's like a 13-10 or 13-1, I think
Didn't
it was.
Didn't Pete Rose break some guy's leg in the All-Star game or something like that?
He did. I mean, that's right.
Those were the days.
Yeah, those were the days. They were playing for nothing. They were just playing
pride.
For
pride, baby. Pride.
I love that the way that they're doing this game is that the winning team, each player gets $20,000.
That's nice.
And I'm like, don't these guys get paid like $40 million a year? Like what's $20,000? They're like, great, thanks. Just keep it on the hutch.
Oh, it sounds like Sinclair executives.
Yeah. Oh, there you go.
Wow. The first salvo.
There it is. Pull! All right.
I've really enjoyed working with you, by
the way. That was good. we'll delete the tapes. Don't worry.
Okay.
What's going down, y'all?
It's a download here at 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. It's time for the worst. Complain about the worst things in society for prizes. And we got good ones tonight. Convention tickets for the Blackhawks coming up. 312-981-7200. In studio, two worst regulars. That came out wrong.
It did.
So OG Elizabeth Gomez and Soli Santos, both members of the Kate Stand-Ups here in Chicago. Guys, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Soli, you got a big week this week. You're going to be on stage at Zany's, right?
Yes.
All the way tomorrow through Sunday. You're featuring for Jeff Dye and Damon Williams. Congratulations. Yes. That's awesome. You're going to be on stage there. Elizabeth Gomez, you also have a show coming up, 20 by 2, July 27th, a great sort of literary performance show that's at the Virgin Hotel. And then also you've got the...
that's multimedia, right?
Okay.
Right, I like to brag about it.
I get to make a
PowerPoint show.
Do you have to?
I don't have to, but I have the option to.
Are you proficient?
No. It's just really three slides.
There's nothing better than a slide.
And it starts with the beginning and the end.
That's and they're the need. Same ones. Right. The only one that changes is the middle one.
And that one just says media offline.
Yeah.
Screwed up right in the middle. All right, Elizabeth and Soli in studio. All right, let's start this week off with Pete Zimmerman, as we do every week here on The Worst. Pete, you want to kick it off?
You know what's the worst?
What's the worst, Pete?
Having to read the instructions.
For anything.
Don't like to do it. I just want to open an item and know how to use it.
Yeah.
He sounds like my dad.
Yeah. It's a peak dad of the worst.
I'm with that, though, because I feel like it's not. I feel like it's more like your millennial cousin, because dad would be like excited about the directions and like putting something together. But I feel like I'm not into that.
No. I don't ever read the directions at all.
My father makes me read the directions and then tells what it said.
When I get stuff from IKEA, I start just building it. And then when I get stuck.
But there are that's no what, directions with IKEA. It's
no,
just
there's
pictures.
Like little pictures. Yeah,
but that's not the same.
You just go fast. It's like a game. You turn the clock on. And you're like, build. What? Oh, this rectangle doesn't work. Now I'll check.
The worst part is then you have to take it back apart.
That's the worst.
You're like, oh, I didn't know that.
Have you ever put together anything from IKEA where you hadn't had to go backwards a step, by undo something to then put it together? It happens to me every time.
Every time.
I think I've done that too.
Then I'd say IKEA directions are probably the worst.
Yeah.
Yes.
They should make it more interactive and fun so that we'll actually pay attention. It's that emotionless guy who's like always on the IKEA
box. Like, what are you talking about? It's got English and Swedish. Like you can get the there's nothing cool.
So
there's nothing better than
so
Swedish.
Yeah.
And it is all pictures.
It is all pictures. You don't have to know how to speak English or Swedish.
What do you do with all those Allen wrenches?
I keep them.
There's so many Allen wrenches.
Yeah, when you need a good Allen wrench. Elizabeth, what do you got for the worst?
You know what's been on my nerves lately is vague booking. I'm sure that's been an item that you guys brought up.
I saw an article that was in the New York Times that was all about that.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's Elizabeth's bit.
That's what we've been I've been watching on Facebook lately these last few days. It's just been like people who are like, I've had a real bad day.
Don't ask about it, right?
Right. Or like, you know what? Friends who stab you in the back aren't friends. And I'm on the other side of the screen being like,
I'll bite.
Give me the names. I want to know when, where, and why.
Well, the worst is when you vague book and you say, I'm not going to name names, but you know who you are. Nah, you know what? You have to say it now.
Yeah, you have to.
At that point, you just hashtag their names.
Yeah. I feel like it's usually stand-ups that do that, and then they will reveal to people anyway.
Well, that's the way to do it.
Yeah.
You put the name of the person in the comments.
Right.
And that way you didn't really say it, but you did.
All right, Soli, what do you got for the worst?
The worst is when you're comfortably asleep in the middle of the night, and then you can't stay asleep because you got to go to the bathroom, but you don't want to get out of bed. And you can't fall back to sleep unless you go. Yeah. That's the worst.
I don't know. I just go with it. I mean, I'm not saying that.
You just like pee in your pants?
No, I don't have a problem with getting up.
I have a problem with getting up. I don't want to get up. If I'm comfortable, I don't want to get up.
Well, plus she gets up at like 4 a.m.
You don't have to remind me.
I know. You're out late and then up
I'm
at 4
already,
in the
yes, I'm already past my bedtime.
Yeah. Uh-oh. Soli Santos, Elizabeth Gomez in studio tonight. All right. We've got a lot of great worsts that are already on the phone as well as on the text. We're going to get to them right after the first break here on The Download. Stay with us.
What's going down,
Elizabeth Gomez, Soli Santos in studio tonight. Two great stand-up comedians, storytellers, performance artists. Okay. Soli is going to be on stage tomorrow through Sunday at Zany's featuring for Jeff Dye and Damon Williams. Elizabeth will be at 20 by 2 on July 27th at the Virgin Hotels. Also doing a Drinkers with Writers Problem. That's her writers collective. And a Kate's ensemble, which you both are a part of, a collaboration at Briscoe's coming up later in the month.
Yes, sir.
All right, so let's get to we got a lot of stuff, so let's get to Chris. Chris, what's the worst, Chris?
So I'll try and condense it. So I have back problems.
Okay.
I bought this cool memory foam mattress.
Okay.
Apparently, I would wake up for days with the left side of my body hanging over the side of the bed. And it was hurting me, so I went to urgent care saying, you know, my back is hurting because I wake up every morning and I'm half hanging off of it. She looks at me and she's like, she checks me out. I think you're having a stroke. I'm like, I'm not having a stroke. I just slept wrong. No, you're having a stroke. I'm sending you to the hospital to get a CT scan.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm calling an ambulance. I'm like, don't call an ambulance. I don't want to pay for it. I'm fine. I drove here. Everything. She's like, nope, I already called it. You can't cancel it. I'm leaving. She said, nope, we can't let you drive. Ambulance comes. I go in an ambulance. They're like, you don't look like someone that's having a stroke. I'm like, tell me about it. So I go to the hospital. I sit there in a bed for like 2 hours waiting for the CT scan. The doctor comes in. They're like, you're not having a stroke. I said, I told her that. I just slept wrong. They gave me Toradol, and I left.
Oh, so let me guess. Can I guess? That now you got to pay for that ambulance, right?
Oh, I get this huge hospital bill.
Right.
So I called and explained to them. I told her I basically slept wrong. Can you give me some? I actually said, can you give me some Toradol in urgent care? No, you're having a stroke. What do they do after the ambulance ride and making me go to the hospital? They give me some Toradol. And I said, right after that, I was shopping at Target, driving around and everything.
No.
Something that you. And then after the dispute, didn't hear back. Today I get a letter saying you're going to collections if you don't pay it.
Oh, Chris, that's the worst.
That is the worst.
It's also pretty serious. Tough way to start the one. But thanks for the story, Chris. But that is the worst. I think I could probably do it quicker. You ready? I went to the doctor. They said I was having a stroke. I wasn't. They made me take an ambulance. I had to pay for that ambulance. That sucks. Right? It does suck. I'm with you. Right?
Yes.
I nailed
beautiful.
It. I nailed it, right?
That was beautiful.
Except I think the urgent care part was important. Which urgent care did you go to?
I don't know.
Oh.
Okay. Chris, he's not
with
us
not there.
Yeah.
He's not with us anymore. Yeah. Whoa. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad. I mean, look at it this way, though. That might be a worst, but it's also the best because she didn't have a stroke. Right? I'm just giving silver
or
lining.
Cancer.
Or cancer. Yeah, I mean, that wasn't even in the equation, but good call, Elizabeth. Yeah. There you go. All right, ready? Here we go. Let's go to some of these worst. The worst is 708 says the worst is having to wait on tables outside when it feels like Africa World at the Brookfield Zoo.
Africa World?
Like Africa, like Asia, like they have the sections with the gorillas. I think that's
I think they just mean weather, like it's just hot.
Africa, it's hot, like it's damp.
Oh, maybe because don't they have like tropical?
I've never been to Africa.
That's the wrong continent. I'm sorry, I'm gonna stop.
You're really, really nailing it there, Soli.
It's not like a dry heat.
I'm so sleepy.
No, I don't. I guess it's the idea that they're saying it when it feels like when it because they say when it feels like Africa World, but I think what they're saying is it just feels like Africa. Africa World is would
that's
not feel
I thought,
anything different than Chicago.
The, yeah, but I don't think like gorilla. The gorilla thing where it's like Tropic World Asia. I haven't been there in many years. I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm going to take back everything I just said.
Yeah.
I also feel like Africa World would never feel like Africa because it's like a fake Africa world, right? Like it's fake Africa.
Yeah, right. I don't understand that at all.
So, well, sure.
Yeah. Maybe what he wanted to say was when it feels like Rainforest Cafe.
Yeah, right.
Oh, that's better. That's better.
Yeah, I think
so.
Yeah,
of course.
There are a lot. I don't know what to say about half of these worst that are coming in as I'm scrolling through. I'm like, we got a real weird week. 773 says it worked. The water main broke in front of the house, came home to refrigerator, electricity shut off, all my groceries ruined.
Yeah, that sucks.
That sucks. okay, here's a good one. I think this is.
Wait, why is her refrigerator shut down?
Because the power was off.
Because of the water main?
Yeah. Mary saves us here. Ready? This is great.
Okay.
Mary
Come on,
says,
Mary.
This is great. The worst is when you're 46 years old and mm-hmm. you realize you could have been a scientist if someone had mentioned it earlier.
Oh! I've had those past thoughts. I'm like, oh.
Oh, no one mentioned that to me.
No one mentioned that as an option.
I've always wanted to be a food scientist. I didn't know that that was an option until my 30s.
I didn't realize being a lady fireman would have been an option. I would have done that. I totally would have done that.
You totally would have done that well.
Saved
lives. She would have just carried bodies.
Yeah. I would have.
312-981-7200. The phone number. We're playing the worst. The worst, 219 says, is when you're cooking dinner. You look down, think to yourself, oh, the saran wrap box is a little too close to the pot. I better move it. And you grab the saran wrap box only to discover that it's already smoldering and you melted an entire roll of saran wrap. Now, you guys really like that one. Wow, the judges love that one. Yes, and really nailed it on that one.
The smell.
I'll go ahead. Let me move on to the next one, guys.
That one was just too long to just pay attention to.
All right. Okay. These are all very specific. Like, this is, I mean, this is probably the best one so far of the six. Like, I'm getting a lot, like, you know, it's the worst of frying pan. Or, you know, it's the
worst. Why is the worst a frying pan?
The segment we do on Fridays with Steve Gadlin.
Oh.
Which is not the worst. It's the best. And I'll argue that all day. 312 says, the worst is when my dog dry humps the company. I guess that's a good one. That's where we're at right now. Okay. That's the winner. That's the leader right now. We've got the guy didn't have a stroke and he's got to pay for the ambulance. I melted the saran wrap.
You know what's worse than the dog humping the company? Is being that company.
Yeah.
Or worse, is the company humping the dog.
Yeah, the company humping the dog would be bad too. But I.
Sorry. Were you getting there? Did I just totally step on your punchline?
No, you didn't.
No, she gave you a look like, no, that's not even a thing, but all right.
But that would be worse.
It would be. I'm not disagreeing.
I mean, what would you even say to your neighbor who's over at the house humping your dog?
Yeah, I mean, get down. That's what you say. Get down.
No, you just
to your friend,
Steve.
You get a water.
Steve, get in the corner.
Get down.
You spray him with water.
Yeah. See, there we go. Here come the comedians.
We're back.
We're not giving you a lot of material tonight because listen to this. 773 says the worst is when you're turning 30 and you're filled with existential dread.
Oh. Welcome to the club, sister.
Hello. I'm like 30.
30.
I look back on 30. I'm like, you're the fetus. Get out of here. You get no sympathy from me.
30. I mean, really, is there any... I mean, I guess you put yourself in the shoes of someone who's 29, but I don't know if I had any existential dread turning 30.
No, I was on top of the world. Yeah. I was starting a roller derby league.
There you go.
I was leaving my ex-husband. It was amazing time.
Real strong. Real strong time.
Yeah. I don't think getting old is like a bad thing, you know, unless you're like getting old to the point where you can't like take care of yourself anymore. Right.
Sleeping half the body is off the bed and they don't know if
it's yeah, exactly.
That's well, being half off the bed's not so bad, but if you're half off the bed and pooping your pants,
yeah, that's
that's where I feel like, right. Nah.
All right, let's keep going. The worst is when you buy your wedding dress, post your happiness to Facebook, and then your future in-laws get upset that they didn't feel included. This all happened last night. So.
Who cares?
You guys are hurting me, man. I can't get any yes ands out of you guys. Yeah. You're bad judges tonight, man.
What? No, that's not true.
Don't make me put the pitchfork artist back on. I'll get the Lighthouser back on the phone. We'll finish up that convo.
Give us some good stories. So like wedding dresses. Yeah, I think the worst is probably just getting married.
I was just going to say, I'm like, you can avoid that problem. Don't get married.
Right.
Do what I did.
No one gets married anymore.
All right, good. You guys are,
cohabitate
right.
until you're sick of each other. And then the one that doesn't own the property has to move out. That's what I've done.
You guys should have your own podcast, your own love podcast. Really,
upgrade to a younger model.
Get a mortgage. Hey, that's what I did.
You did, and you did it well.
Thank you.
I've seen him. He's hot.
All right, there you go. All right, 815 says, the second day of my diet, I went to the Dunkin' Donuts drive-thru, ordered an egg white sandwich, looked into the bag. When I got to work, it was a dozen chocolate donut holes.
I hope you ate
them. They gave me the wrong order. We don't know if they ate it or not, but... That is the worst. If you're on a diet and you're like, I'm going to eat, although egg white sandwich at Dunkin' Donuts, probably not the best for a diet anyway.
I feel like no matter what you're doing, you shouldn't probably be in that line.
Yes. Yeah. McDonald's, you already took the step in the wrong direction.
Yeah. Well, Pete and I will go Dunkin' Donuts after 2 o'clock because they have the iced coffee that's a dollar.
Yeah. Do you get like the big jugs of them? Because they come in these huge,
like a big gulp size.
Yeah,
yeah. Essentially, that's what they're offering for a dollar. Just trying to get rid of it.
I love the image of you and Pete like holding hands and going to the Dunkin' Donuts.
Essentially, it. Yeah.
To eat every time, like you guys alternate paying.
Because I had a $5 bill I needed to get rid of. It's actually nice when you get the medium coffee, right. But sometimes they run out of medium cups, so you get the big gulp, and sometimes they're not really good about they'll fill it to the rim for
you. They forget that they're trying to. Sometimes they'll go, okay, uh-huh. We're only going to fill this 3/4 of the way because it's a medium, but then they're like, it's just fake. It's not even real. We're going to have the full thing.
You boys are living the dream.
We are.
The dream. If only one day.
The update from 815 who went through the drive-thru on their diet, the text is, I ate every one of them.
Good for you. Now she's my favorite.
There you go. Elizabeth Gomez, Soli Santos in studio tonight. We're playing the worst 312-981-7200. We've got some great. I saw like five just pop up, and the one that popped up, I was just about to. We got some great texts like this, and I went, oh, the worst. You have gout and you stub your toe.
Oh, the worst is getting your stubbing your toe, but then on top of it with gout. Oh man.
<There you go>.
That was bad.
All right, let's hope for a more uplifting comedic second half of the worst, because right now it's just everyone is going, I got a personal problem.
Yes.
Let me put it on there. That's not good enough to win the convention ticket.
We need some general ones that we can play with.
There you go. Elizabeth said, there you go. truer words never said here on The Download. All right, we're playing the worst here on The Download. 312-981-7200. Elizabeth Gomez, Soli Santos in studio tonight. We're complaining about the worst things in society for prizes. And we've got a pair of tickets to the 10th annual Chicago Blackhawks convention at the Hilton Chicago Hotel, July 21st through the 23rd. Give away a pair of tickets to that. And you know what? Let's get right back into it because we got some good stuff. Had a lot of texts tonight. Like I said, the first half, you guys, was like bummer central.
I don't think it was bummer. I just think it was specific. Oh. Like people weren't like, they were just being too.
It was like all
too,
about them. Yes. Their specific issue as opposed to, you know, what's the worst in society?
Yeah. Because like how many times does a water main break for every, in Chicago.
Yeah. Right.
That could be a very general one, actually.
All right. Let's try this one. Ready? 773 says the worst is when you put the orange juice back on the shelf at the grocery, not over the yogurt to the left of it. Pick that up. Oh, okay. Knock over, not knock over the yogurt to the left of it, pick that up, bang your head against the shelving unit, and then the shelving unit falls.
So he's basically like, the worst is being clumsy. The worst is being just like a clumsy fool.
There's something really great about that.
It's like a sitcom scene.
Yeah, right?
It's like having your, it's like your PMS, like for women. No, I'm serious. Before women, like before their periods, we get real clumsy. That's like an actual symptom. Clumsiness.
Is it?
It's like, oh my God, I didn't know that. Explains so many years.
Yeah, like right before your period, you get sleepy.
I didn't know this.
Holy, oh no. Yeah.
You get sleepy and you drop everything.
I thought it was just me.
You know what I'm talking about.
Having a lot of head injuries as a child.
No.
I fell down the stairs many times as a child. I just figured that was what was happening.
Yeah. For some reason, not having babies makes us very accident prone.
Really? I guess so. Here you go.
Justin's like, I can't talk about periods.
I can't talk about
moving
it.
Moving on.
Do not typecast me.
The worst I will talk is periods all night. When ladies start talking about their periods.
The worst is when you have those maxi wings that like folds up into your underwear and then the slides to the left. It's terrible.
All right. Now I can't. Now I'm done. 224 will bring us back. The worst is when you spit your gum out your car window and end up stepping on it hours later in the parking lot.
How does that happen?
Who cares?
Okay, what is it's not,
it's not like it's not that hard to take it off.
Yeah, but if you step on it, it's probably bad to get off your foot.
You know what's the worst? Or your shoe?
You want to talk about gum problems? You know what the worst is? Being put in a headlock by your older brother and then him trying to shove gum, chewed up gum in your ear, but what? Instead it gets stuck in your hair.
No, that is
and
the
then
worst.
Your mom has to try to use peanut butter to take it out.
That's awful. How does peanut butter get gum out of your
my
hair?
My mother used
I've
that.
Always wanted to know that.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I guess it just clumps it up or something. I don't know.
Yeah, it just seems like more food in your hair.
Maybe that's the idea. It's everyone sees the peanut butter and not the gum anymore.
Put in some celery, some ants on the log with the hair.
Exactly. 630 says the worst, and it happens all the time, is going to pick up a pizza, quickly racing it home and opening the box to realize it's the wrong pizza and you don't like the toppings at all.
Oh yeah. That is.
That does suck.
Yeah. 708 says the worst are baby shower games.
Yes. Oh my God. Do you know about the melted chocolate diaper game? It's the worst.
That sounds the worst.
Yeah, like there's something about like you melt chocolate in the baby diapers. Ugh, I can't remember the game. That's how much I hate the game. I don't even remember the rules.
I hate them so much. I don't go to baby showers.
You don't?
Good.
No, that's I try to find ways to avoid it. What do I want to go to that for?
They are awful.
What makes them awful? I mean, it's a gathering. You give gifts and...
No, it's the games.
I also feel like you decided to have a baby. Why am I giving you a present?
That what they should give you
they
a
should give me a present for not having babies. How about
you guys are out of control.
Congratulations for not bringing another problem.
Where's your
to the
party
planet. You know
where's
yes.
your party
yes
okay we'll throw you a party you want a party we'll throw you a party so it's not
I want gifts
deal. We'll give you gifts.
Can you give her some dirty diapers?
I was gonna say it's all gonna be like diaper genies and little onesies, but
I don't want baby gifts.
Well, that's what a baby shower is.
I didn't say I wanted a baby shower. I want I said not having a baby shower. That's I'm not having a baby shower.
Baby shower.
Shower. Yeah. Yes.
I also am tired of like life event parties. tired of going to them. I don't want to go to your bridal, your bachelorette party. I don't want to go to
They have horrible games too.
Yeah. I don't want to go to your lingerie party
Why
before,
would I
your,
make
before
a
your wedding.
Fake wedding dress out of toilet paper. Who does that? All these ladies at bridal showers. That's the worst. Makes me angry.
Soli's getting angry. I love it. Yeah. We'll have to figure out a party game for your not baby shower.
It'll be just like shots of tequila. Who can do them the fastest?
That's it, yeah. 214 says the worst, young people who mock early bird specials. Wait till you get old and can't drive in the dark.
That one was awesome.
That one is awesome, actually. I like that one.
I personally love senior hour for dining.
Yeah. That sounds good. The worst is buying a pair of dress shoes, trying one on at the store. When it comes time to wear them, the other shoe is a size smaller. Oh!
I always check.
You do?
Yeah. That's what Famous Footwear is good for. They always check your shoes before you purchase.
Do you do?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's smart.
I know.
I guess you're supposed to do that. You pull it out and you look at it. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, it is your one job at the shoe store.
Yeah, right.
Because people aren't like, you know, back in the day, they used to put the shoes on your feet.
Right.
But now they're
now
just
you
like.
Don't have to do that either.
Yeah. Now they're just like replenishing boxes and then checking the shoe size before you check out.
As a former shoe store employee, you know, I worked at the Foot Locker. I used to dominate the Foot Locker, the uniform. And somebody would ask for, say, you know, oh, give me this in a 10, and you don't have a 10, but you want to make a sale. So you grab a 9.5 or a 9 or something, and you just bring it out to them, and they try it on. Like, yeah, this feels all right. And then you just don't say anything. You just
look at that. Tales from the Foot Locker.
Yeah. You know what's the worst?
The unauthorized
tricky shoe salesman.
Yeah.
Or when one's on display, it's kind of dirty. You just kind of sneak it in the box without them having giving it a look over. You know?
Yeah. Why is this one red? I'm like, hey, man, that's the style. One's red, one's black. That's really good. The worst is splitting. The worst is splitting your pants when you bend over to pick up a Cheeto.
A Cheeto. I like that one.
There you go. All right. There's some nasty weather coming through right here in Michigan Avenue. Also, a thunderstorm warning. Just not the worst. It's going to be the worst. Thunderstorm warning for Kane County just coming across. And also, you can see the lightning in the distance in Chicago. Just letting everybody know. 412 says, what is a baby shower? Okay. I don't even know. 916. The worst is when my boss ate all of my almonds that I left on my desk after I offered her one. The next day, she told me she was up all night with a horrible explosive diarrhea screaming my name.
That's wow, what she gets.
No, they're almond rocas. What are rocas? R-O-C-A.
Oh, they're the chocolates with like the nougats in it.
Yeah.
You know, they come in the pink tins at Walgreens.
Nobody told her to eat the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot of candy.
That's a lot of candy.
I think she needs to have a talk with her boss because that's a lot of candy.
That is the 518 says the worst is when the husband announces we're pregnant. Really, dude? Are you planning to conceal carry? It's a gun reference somehow in there.
Because babies equal guns.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. okay, the worst. Let's see. Here we go. Get into the store just as they're closing the doors. You can't charm your way in like you used to. But I just have one thing. And they're like, tough.
I think the opposite. I think when you're a person who's closing a store and that customer comes in and is like, I just need one thing.
Yeah,
and then you're like, that person's the worst.
That person is the worst. 815 says the worst people buying scratch-off tickets in line at the gas station.
Because they're scratching off at the time? Like if they get them and then they scratch them off?
Yeah. That's all it says. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's not...
I hate... Anyone in a gas station, when you know, the technology that has been provided to us in which we can now use our debit cards and credit cards and slide something in it as one of the best inventions of all time at a gas station. Because having to go in there and stand behind someone who's not purchasing gas is the worst. When you stand there and they're like, let me get seven of those scratch offs and you guys get Mountain Dew. And I'm like, dude, I just want to put 10 on pump four and get out of here.
They should have two lines.
I always use the card at the pump for that.
You do? Yeah, see? Right?
But you know what I love is like across the border, like in Michigan, they have these instead of scratchers, they have these things called toppers. Toppers? Yeah. Tabs. Tabs.
Hey, Justin, you know what the worst is?
What's that?
When the news guy has to jump in with a weather update.
I get a little one, but what do you got?
A severe thunderstorm warning now issued by the National Weather Service for northern Kane County. This is in effect until about 11:15 tonight. 60-mile-per-hour wind gusts, half-dollar-size hail. Sleepy Hollow, West Dundee, St. Charles, Geneva, Bartlett, Wayne are all in the path of this storm. In fact, I'm looking at the radar right now. It's stretching from out over the lake into the north sections of Chicago, up into Winnetka, Highland Park, west into Mount Prospect, Rutland Township. You're all affected by this storm.
There you go. Thanks, Rob. Flash flood stuff too as well. So pay attention. That storm's, I think it's all of the counties pretty much through 11:15 tonight. All right, Elizabeth Gomez, Soli Santos in studio tonight. We're playing the worst, 312-981-7200. We'll take a break. We'll come back, and we will give away the tickets for the Blackhawks convention. Stay with us. All All right, it's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Soli Santos, Elizabeth Gomez in studio tonight. Soli's going to be at Zany's tomorrow through Sunday, featuring for Jeff Dye and Damon Williams. Elizabeth will be at the 20 by 2 on July 27th at the Virgin Hotels. We are playing the worst, 312-981-7200. All right, you ready for an After Dark one?
Ooh, yeah,
it's
I
pretty,
like
it's
it.
Pretty dumb, but here we go. 916, the worst was when my roommate was watching pornography on his tablet in his room. He accidentally hit the screen share button, and it showed on my smart TV where I was having dinner with my family.
Oh, no. I think the worst is that your roommate's watching porn while your family's over.
Yeah, right? Like,
even if it didn't show up, he's just like masturbating while your parents are eating turkey.
I'm going to go in the other room. It's like a Joe Montana sketch on Saturday Night Live in the 80s. I'm going to go into my room and masturbate. Yeah, that's true. That's true. It's been a long day. It's nice to see you, Mr. Jenkins. Miss Jenkins, I'm going to go ahead.
I'm going to turn in for the night.
You know what gets me really, really excited is when your parents are over.
In front of the, so they're watching dinner in front of the, or they're eating dinner while they're watching TV. Okay. The 312 says the worst is seeing dead people at viewings. No matter how many I've seen, they all look the same. Dead. What's the point?
Oh, looking at dead people at like funeral viewings.
Yeah, right.
At a wake.
Yeah. I mean, that's that is kind of the worst because they're dead.
Yeah. Okay. The worst, 224 says, the worst is putting on a wet one-piece bathing suit.
Why would you put that on?
Well, I mean, if it's wet and it's the only suit you have. Like if you went swimming and then you went took it off and you want to have to put it back on.
But why would it be the worst? Because you would just go back in the water. It's not like you're sitting around in the wet bathing suit.
You're just going to put it on it. Yeah, and just sit there.
I don't know. I don't know the answer to these.
You know,
that's one line. That's all that 224 gave. I don't know the situation.
We need more information, Justin Kaufman. I think what's worse is like when you do an athletic event and your like sweat like accumulates in between your legs, and then you have to like walk around in your like wet shorts.
Yeah,
like around the gym.
I would say the idea of like. For guys to have wet swimming trunks, like you get done and you try to dry off and it's still wet, and then you have to get in the car and you have to drive or you're doing anything after that, it's the worst.
Why don't you just change your swimming shorts?
Maybe you don't have another pair of shorts.
Like, you don't have another pair of pants.
No.
Well, no, I think
because you drove there with those on, and then you thought.
Well, that's happened. Yeah. I feel like that's happened at like the beach. Like you know,
thank
you go
Soli.
To the beach and then you,
but you
you're
have
leaving.
A car. Why don't you leave your shorts in the car?
Because maybe you didn't have
but
shorts to begin with.
What if you put
with?
Shorts on, but now you didn't have like you don't have like you forgot like your underwear. So I guess you could go, you know, you could freestyle it, but you know, or you wear the shorts and then they're
Soli,
all wet.
Thank you for the help, but I'll take it from here.
I know I ruined it. I ruined it.
It's great for a minute. No, I'm just saying, like, if you showed up, like, a lot of times you'll already be in your swimming trunks, you go to swim, and you think, oh, yeah, I'll dry off because I'll just lay up at the pool or whatever it is, but then you don't, it's still damp, and then you have no, so then you the rest of the commute to where your next place, you have damp shorts on.
That's what I meant.
I still just don't understand why you wouldn't put shorts in there, in your car.
Because life sometimes is about spontaneity.
Thank you, Soli.
But it's not that spontaneous if you have to go and get the shorts. Like you have to at home, you're gonna be like, "Oh, I'm gonna put on these swim shorts and then take them to the beach."
All right. Kyle, what's the worst, Kyle?
Well, I think the worst is when you're in public and someone's using the cell phone, but they're using speakerphone.
You know what? You're gonna win tonight. That drives me crazy. And I was talking with Duffy too today about people. I could take you one further on that. FaceTime in public is now the new thing.
Oh yeah, when they're walking down the
street. Talking, or worse, no, we're talking about like you're in line at Walgreens and someone is FaceTiming while they're in a line with somebody and loud and they can hear it. And you're just like, what are you doing? That's not any sort of, like I'm trained, my generation is trained that if you call while I'm in line at Walgreens, I go, hey, what's up? Yeah, I can't talk. All right, cool. Bye. I'm not like, hey, like I'm not FaceTiming to do, no one ever calls FaceTime to go, hey, what's up? How you doing? You're like, that's a thing you do for a while, right? Like, right. Hey, it's lazy. So, like, the idea you would do a FaceTime in a line at Walgreens, it's the worst.
That is the worst. I also think, like, speakerphone on CTA.
Yeah, that one.
Like,
last
why are you
week,
on
yeah.
the train with a speakerphone
no,
on?
No, last week, I forgot. What's the girl that calls in? Really cute high school kid who always calls in. What's her name?
Jasmine.
She won. Because Jasmine said the worst is when people have their phones and they put the music on the train on speakerphone.
Oh,
that's like the 80s version of the boombox.
That's what we were talking about. We're like, but there's headphones. You have determined that you want everyone to know the track that you're listening to. You're that you're just a freakazoid on the train that you're going to be like, I need everyone to know what I'm listening to. I'm going to put it on speakerphone. That's so dumb. It goes against the technology. The technology is designed for the headphones.
Not anymore, because right now they're like Bluetooth, right?
You can Bluetooth it. All right, I'm giving Kyle, you're a winner on that one. I'm going to, right away, stay on hold. That's a winner.
I agree.
Speakerphone,
that's...
anyone talking, speakerphone, FaceTime. What has become of this country?
Get off of my lawn!
Right?
You know what? This is not exactly the same thing, but like an offshoot of like just cell phone and technology. I really hate when people leave me a voicemail.
Another
like,
great one,
why
yeah.
are you right. leaving me a voicemail? Now I got an extra step. I got to listen to right. the voicemail. I got to dump the voicemail. When all I'm going to do is call you back, I already know you called. Your phone number's on the phone.
It's only family members that do that.
No. I had a friend
your
do it recently.
Hey, and Elizabeth,
I was just silly. Calling you because no. And I was like, you know what? That's wrong. You've broken all the rules of society right. today. Yeah. You do not leave voicemails.
No. 630 says, how about people using cell phones in the bathroom? Yeah. 815, the worst is actually sitting on a Metro train designated quiet car with someone who won't shut their phone on vibrate and they're texting constantly.
Texting isn't bad.
I agree with that. No,
you can text as much as you want. No.
If it's a quiet car.
It is completely silent.
No, that's what they're saying. That's what they're saying. Elizabeth, for your indignation there. It's false indignation. What they're saying is they have some alert that goes bing, bing. Every time they text.
Do they have that sound that when you hit the keys, it's like tick, 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 tick,
probably.
Tick, 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 tick. Ooh. Okay, now I'm mad.
Do them all.
I can watch you make that face all day.
I like that one. Okay. All right, this is a good one. Okay, I'm taking that one too.
Yeah.
All right, we've rounded it out. All right, we're done. You guys were semi-okay tonight. Soli Santos. All right, so we're playing for prizes. We got a pair of tickets to the 10th annual Chicago Blackhawks convention at the Hilton Chicago Hotel on July 21st to the 23rd. Stop by, join our live broadcast on the 21st with Rokan and the 22nd with The Beat, all brought to you by Meijer, now offering home delivery across Chicagoland. Also, Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's is home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnati's.com. So we're going to give 815 with the Metro train for any place that you're in where someone doesn't turn off the alerts to the text. This person, a Metro train designated quiet car with someone who won't shut their phone and put it on vibrate, and they are texting constantly. They get a pizza. Congratulations, 815. You got a pizza. Also, 214 tonight's going to get a pizza as well. The worst, young people who mock early bird specials. Wait until you get old and can't drive in the dark.
That one's great. That's great.
And that probably would be number one, but we want to give Kyle, who called in, who talked about the speakerphone conversation. Kyle, you got a pair of tickets to the 10th annual Chicago Blackhawks convention at the Hilton Chicago Hotel, mostly because it's not just as FaceTime, too. It's all of it.
Yeah.
You got me so riled up, so angry at the world. Thanks a lot. Thanks, Kyle. Right at the end of the show, too. I appreciate it.
Oh,
Soli Santos, she'll be on stage tomorrow through Sunday at Zany's. Elizabeth Gomez will be at the 20 by 2 literary show on July 27th at the Virgin Hotels. You guys, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Thank
Good to see you.
Thank you.